Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 3 of the Modern Masculinity Project. My name is Brad Pankey. I am the host of this podcast, this show where I sit down with other men to talk openly and vulnerably about life, masculinity, and really whatever we want to talk about. There is not really, we're not really restricted to talking about one thing. It's just about being open and vulnerable and practice sharing. So let's get right to it. My guest this week is Caleb O'Halloran of Portland, Oregon. He is a videographer, rad dude, who I hired to shoot an event for the company that I work for here in Portland. Of course, you know, coming into this, I knew he was intellectually very intelligent and just had a good vision for what he does in life as a videographer. He shoots a lot of weddings and is getting into other events as well. So you should definitely look him up if you're getting married and in need of a videographer. But what I also learned about him is he's just an incredibly insightful dude and just a really great guy that I've enjoyed getting to know over the past several months. And this conversation was kind of the launch point for that. Speaking just for myself, it is a bit of a heavy conversation that you're about to hear. We both came into this not really knowing a lot about each other, I guess. And what we discovered was, is we both shared a certain happening in our life that we both have lost a parent in our early to mid 20s. And you're going to kind of hear that in real time. And it's this kind of vulnerability and openness that I'm hoping to get out of every episode. So let me know what you think. Also, I mentioned an email that my dad wrote me. I'm going to read that after the conversation. So stay tuned after the episode to hear that exact email that I had saved. So you can just kind of get a good, really good sense for how we communicated with each other. So here it is, episode number 3 of the Modern Masculinity Project, made by men, done by women, with Caleb O'Halloran.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below.
You're getting the new setup here. Other guests have never had a table in front of them.
Oh man, this is a nice table too.
I know, it's like
you got a lifetime.
I'm not sure if it's mine or if it's work's table, but I know I had one there, so I just took one.
I've seen these at Home Depot.
But it's nice because it comes up a little higher.
That's very nice. Nice resin.
I guess so. Coffee good?
It is. Where's it from?
I got it over at Ken's.
Ken's
Bakery.
That's where we went
yeah. Before.
Cool.
What's your coffee order? What's the story behind your coffee order?
Like just ordering black coffee?
Yeah.
There actually is a story.
Good. I think we all have stories.
I never drank coffee until my first like real job, like full-time 40-hour a week job, which was night shift in a warehouse for Sysco Food Services. So like loading, like getting like giant bulk food orders and bringing them to the trucks for like 10 hours all night.
Did you wear a face net around that beard?
I didn't have the beard back then.
Oh, man.
This beard is about 5 years old.
That's a good beard. Go ahead.
So I was like 18. It was like my first job out of high school.
Yeah.
And that's like when I started drinking coffee because for two reasons. I was tired because it was the middle of the night and it was freezing because it was like a refrigerated warehouse.
Oh, my God.
And so whenever I'd have like my breaks, like it was a union job, so it was very strict about like you get a 15-minute break like every 4 hours on the dot. Or 2 hours, or whatever it was. But then I just like get a cup of coffee, and like the creamer there was like worse.
Is it like the powder
made it worse? Yeah,
powdered. And it was probably like 10 years old, and it was super clumpy.
Exactly. So it was somehow I found it more enjoyable to just have the black
just
coffee.
Black
and I
coffee.
Really pretty much just drank it to keep myself warm and awake, and then I kind of got hooked on it.
Was
it
like,
wasn't even good. It was bad.
No, I was going to say, was it one of those big industrial pots?
Uh-huh.
And they just...
Yeah.
Folgers, probably.
Whatever, some big wholesale...
Maxwell
bulk.
House.
Yeah, some, like, hotel... or, like, hospital coffee.
Yeah.
Kinda,
oh,
you know?
God.
And then when I'd, like... So I got, like, okay with, like, the bitterness of coffee and, like, the feel of black coffee. And then when I'd have good coffee, like, at anywhere else...
You're like, oh.
It was really good.
It's a whole different world here.
And then college as a whole, like I drink so much coffee in college. I
just trying to stay awake, though.
I'm not even kidding. There are times where I'd make a, like, studying. This is like the stereotypical situation, like studying all night. Like I'd make a pot of coffee. In the house I lived in, we had one of those really old, like Mr. Coffee.
Oh, sure.
Like glass orb pots, you know? Like
the one my grandma has. The one my grandma has.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would like make a whole one and like drink it by myself.
And you'd probably get about, what, three or four deep, and then you start getting that, like...
I don't know.
That super jittery.
It's more like I had to take three or four cups before that went away.
You just power through it?
It was like I would have that all the time, unless I had three or four
cups. Oh, my God.
Cups.
Well, you could have been doing much worse to stay awake.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the lesser of several evils.
Yeah, you could have just been on speed, some sort of form of speed,
exactly.
And just been like,
yeah, that was just my one.
Yeah, it's
my
just
one thing.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
that's not bad. It's just always interesting, like, because I text you, I'm like, hey man, I'll grab you a coffee, and you're like, yeah, I take it black.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, he's got an order.
Well, because everyone's always asking.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't at this point, like, I admit, I don't want cream in it.
No, me neither.
Especially like I hardly ever eat or drink. Or consume dairy anymore. And it'll make me feel, I won't feel very good. So I don't.
Right.
Like, I just make sure, like, don't put anything in it.
Don't put it in
just
there.
Just literally fill it up with coffee and put a lid on it.
Yeah. My coffee evolution went, I don't know. Like, I'd been drinking just like whatever, like a drink black coffee when my dad had it growing up or something like that. But eventually, once I quote unquote got into coffee, it was like, I'll have a vanilla soy latte. Or it went from like, vanilla latte to vanilla soy latte.
It adds a word.
It just add a word time. Every time. Yeah. And then it just went to, well, can't have that sugar. Cut out the sugar. Soy latte.
And then it goes back.
Yeah. And then then I started receding back and I'm like, okay, Americano, but I'll do just a little cream and a little sugar. That's good. Then I'm like, yeah, I don't need that. Maybe I'll just take out the sugar. And it's like cream Americano. And it's like, yeah, I'll just take that shit out of there. Now I'm just drinking Americanos.
And pretty soon you're just going to be having straight espresso shots.
Straight espresso shots.
Yeah, just take out the water, too.
I've done that. It's a little harsh.
I've done it, too. So another story is another crappy job I had. This wasn't even that bad of a job, but I used to work at a Starbucks, too.
And me, too.
And it was like, if I, like, my espresso shots got me through. Because you'd work at, like, 6 in the morning and stuff, so.
Yeah.
And I'd take the bus in, and sometimes the bus was a little later than I expected, and I'd get there like, you know, seconds before my shift started, and I needed to get my coffee and I hadn't had it yet. So espresso shots were the way to get through that.
Nice.
Just give me one.
Just throw, power them
just
down.
Just throw it back.
And yeah. When I really want to go, I do a shot in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Just do black coffee That's and a good. Shot of espresso in it.
Whew. That'll get you.
That lights you up.
It does.
Tell me about that first job, though, out of high school. Is that the first job out of high school you said?
Yeah, that was the first, like, full-time job I ever had.
Was that just like, I need a job, any job?
Yeah, my dad was a sales rep, is still a sales rep for Cisco.
Yeah.
So his job is to go to the restaurants and, like,
deliver,
get the clients and take care of them and take their orders and
and
send it back to where I worked.
Yeah.
And we would fill the orders, but it was like Red Robin. So huge orders, you know, like... We'd build these pallets with all the cases of food, and they would seriously be like 8 feet high.
Yeah.
And we'd have to wrap them, and they were on the back of these electric pallet jacks that we would like literally ride around up and down the aisles. But that's what the job was. It was literally going up and down aisles with this little like screen attached to your wrist.
Yeah.
It would just tell you like, go to this bay and get this item and put it on. And then it would be like, okay, next item. And it was that for 10 hours at a time.
Not a lot of thought going on there.
Oh, no. You were like a rat in a in a lab.
Oh my God.
And you have this thing on your wrist that's not only telling you what to do, it's also keeping track of how fast you're doing it.
Oh no.
And where you are. So like your bosses are just sitting in this office and like watching this.
Did it have like a shock on it?
No, but if you got slow, they would like your name, they would sometimes they'd have to call you like, hey, Caleb, come on. Like so and so needs to talk to you, and they'd just be like, hey, you need to pick it up or whatever. Or
what
like
is that?
Or like, hey, you grabbed the wrong item a few times or something.
I would lasted one day.
Yeah, it's like you make a mistake, like they know immediately they know where you are. They know if you took a bathroom break, how long you took a bathroom break.
I've heard Amazon warehouse workers, similar deal.
It's a pretty standard warehouse system, like for any big order based
company.
Like I've run into other people before. They call them order pickers.
Yeah.
Like that's what the job was.
Yeah.
And I've run into some other people that have done it for like Fred Meyer and stuff.
Sure.
It's the same job everywhere.
Well, now can you imagine doing that where it's like, hey, this is a 2-hour delivery item and you need to
I know.
You need to sprint your
The order
down
came
that.
In a minute ago and it needs to go out in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that's nuts.
That isn't
I don't understand that. That's gotta be some different system. I don't know. But ours were it was a relatively quick turnaround. It was like restaurant ordered more, you know, burger patties, and they need them tomorrow morning.
Okay,
so
nothing
it's like get them
like,
on the trucks now because the truck has this like 12-hour route, and so you got to get it on.
But nothing like a same day order. You wouldn't have to do
no,
that.
No, for those, I think they did little specialty. Like they had a couple sprinter vans, and it was like somebody else's job to just do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know much about that part, but
yeah.
Anyway, my job was just to literally go up and down the aisles and do whatever this little screen. It's kind of like a Buzz Lightyear laser too, like a scanner. You'd like hit the barcode on the box, so it like would scan it in.
Yeah.
But there were still ways to screw it up because I did that.
Well, you were 18.
Yeah, there's still and even though 18
year olds can screw everything up. There's always a way.
Yeah.
So did you do that? Just because your dad had an in there, you were just looking for a job.
Well,
he was like, hey man, family business, Cisco.
It wasn't a family business. It's this giant corporation. But yeah, it was like I could get a job there. It paid $14 an hour, which to me at the time, 18 years old in like 2008.
How old are you?
I'm 27.
27. Okay. So that's good money for an
18 year old. Yeah, it's like the first, you know, like what else are you going to do? Work minimum wage at the grocery store or $14 an hour, which at that time was like a solid $5 more than minimum wage.
Yeah.
Plus you'd get at least a couple hours of overtime every day.
Yeah.
So for the last 2 hours of every shift, pretty much, I was making
time and a half of
14.
Yeah, 21 bucks. So, yeah.
So I was getting these like checks, these like four-figure checks for the first time ever.
Oh, God.
So that was cool.
What are you doing with that when you're 18?
I bought a guitar. I bought a TV.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Yeah.
The things you need to start out as an 18-year-old.
I still have both. I still have my guitar and my TV, the same one.
Same one. Okay, yeah. I respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think we had talked about that
but
before.
I also just like went out to eat a lot.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Sure.
Because why not?
Yeah.
What's $15 every day? I can make that in an hour. You know, that was my thought because I had no bills. It was like.
Still living at home.
Still living at home, about to go off to college.
And
that's when I realized like, okay, I got to hang on to this.
Yeah. That's like, when that first rent check comes
in. My parents were helping me with college quite a bit, but not 100%. So, I mean, it was a good job for what I needed.
Yeah.
I didn't have to work a ton in school, but I had to do that job in the
summers
and Christmas break and spring break and stuff.
Those first jobs, man, we have out of college.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Did you work directly with Pops at all?
No.
No.
He was on the road. He's outside sales. So yeah. He was like never there.
Was that for the better? Do you think you could have gotten
probably,
there?
Especially at that time. Like I think now I'd be fine working with my dad.
Sure.
But like back then I was much more of a kid.
Yeah.
And you know, it was much more like I'm a kid and he's my dad.
Sure.
And like
there's a clear hierarchy. Yeah. You didn't like the hierarchy.
Exactly.
Didn't want any part of it.
Because like just raking leaves in the backyard under his supervision sucked.
Oh my God.
You know, because I wasn't fast enough. And,
and you weren't getting paid for that either.
Yeah, or I was getting paid. Maybe. Or it'd be like didn't lose something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I was really getting paid, but I was not getting something taken away.
little different.
It's like you get to keep driving the car this week if you rake the leaves. It's like, that's still motivation, but it's not as fun.
Thanks for the positive reinforcement, Dad.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but now it's like, I guess almost 10 years later, that'd be different, but
Well, it'd be a lot different, right?
Yeah, an 18-year-old kid is different than a 27-year-old
man,
like working for my dad.
Well, I would hope by this time, and kind of talked about this before, but like you get to a certain point where the hierarchy, like the father-son hierarchy, kind of dissolves.
It shifts, yeah.
Or just breaks down. The point where you start seeing them as just kind of a flawed another human person. And just another human, you're like, oh, this guy's pretty messed up and he's tried his hardest. But
yeah,
at what point did that hit for you with your dad or your parents?
Oh, well, my mom died like 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And that really changed the dynamic.
Yeah.
Because suddenly my dad went from like my dad to like this lonely man, you know, who's like living by himself.
Needed friendship, consoling.
Needs friends and people and support.
Yeah.
So that's really, I mean, that's an easy answer
sure.
for me.
Sure.
It's probably more complicated for other people, but there's a clear, like, the dynamic of the whole family changed, like, on one day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think my relationship with my dad's always been good, but it's really good now, I think.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Because, yeah. I mean, that can go, I feel like that can go, just from what I've observed, that can go either way for guys.
Yeah.
It can turn into, like, I was with my dad and, like, best friends. You know, or it can turn into just like straight, like, I don't want anything to do with that dude.
Yeah.
You know,
and you and your dad are pretty good friends.
We were. Yeah. He passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, sorry for your loss too. But you can kind of empathize with how that does change family dynamics and how it changes your view on everything.
Yeah.
Everything, totally. I imagine. How did your mom pass away?
She had breast cancer.
Breast cancer.
Fought it for couple years.
Yeah.
And it was my senior year of college.
Yeah.
Right towards the end. But I was able to finish. Luckily, all I was doing was taking like PE classes. And stuff, so I didn't really need to focus, but which is good because I wasn't able to. But yeah, it was 5 years ago in this month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Had your dad?
Brain cancer.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
similar.
What does it. Well, my mom's breast cancer spread into her brain, actually.
Oh, man.
And that's. It was like, you could tell.
Share, I guess, a little bit about mine. Keep asking you about yours, but like, I will get to that. But so he just diagnosed, like, in 2012. They're like, hey, we found a tumor after he had tons of problems. He typical man, was like, he's having these headaches and was dizzy for a month or two. He's like, nah, it's just kind of weird. It's just kind of a weird thing. And he just ignored it. And one day it was at school graduation, and he was feeling really terrible, he said, and he just dizzy and like blurred vision, and he's like, what the hell is going on here? And he said he started driving home, and he, like, while he was driving, he didn't remember what he was doing. I'm just like, dude, you're flying down a California freeway at 80 miles an hour, and you don't remember what you're doing. He's like, yeah, that was stupid. So he called the doctor, went in, and they found a tumor like the size of, I think, a golf ball. And it was pushing his whole, his brain stem over. And they're like, yeah, this looks like a glioblastoma, which is like, they said the worst thing you can have.
Brain cancer.
You're done.
Yeah.
They're like, you have 2 years to live. So diagnosed in June 2012. Died in June 2014.
Wow.
But it was like, and getting back to what you said about your mom, it's like, so was it the similar thing where it was like diagnosis? Oh, it's like, ooh, sorry.
No, it actually had like an up and down. Like, she was diagnosed 2011 or something. And it was like, you got breast cancer, but it's not like, they're like, it's pretty aggressive, but like, we've seen this before and like, it's not the worst.
Yeah.
And so she jumped right into chemo and radiation and all that stuff. And about 6 months later, they did like surgery to remove it. And then they were like, okay, we got it. It's done. And we're like, oh, okay, cool. That was scary, but great. And they were like, we did a scan, didn't show up. We removed it. Great. And then another 6 months later, let's see. I think if my dad or my sister listens to this, they're going to probably like correct me on a few details of the order of stuff. But basically, I'm pretty sure what we just realized something had to come back, and what made us realize is my mom's like collarbone was hurting, like sore, and she went in and it had broken, and then they had found out that there was a a tumor, like in her collarbone, wrapped around her collarbone or something like that. Oh, that had broke her collarbone.
Yeah.
And then that's when we realized, like, oh, the cancer's back.
The tumor broke her collarbone?
Or something like, yeah. Like, wow. Something like that. It had basically, and at that point they were like, oh, shoot, it's.
Oh, it's going.
It's the same cancer.
It's running.
It had just almost died, but not quite. And it's, for the last 6 months, been, like, unchecked and growing. Yeah. And now it's spread all over the place. And it's, like, at that point, stage four. So it's, like, breast cancer, but it's also liver and bone. And then it eventually did. So that, then another another year, I think she fought that. And then eventually spread to her brain. And it was, like, when the doctors had told us, like, oh, it just spread to her brain. She died like 5 days later.
Oh, man.
Because it's like, yeah, once your brain can't fight,
yeah.
Like once your body's compromised in that way.
Yeah, you're done.
You're done. Like it's amazing how powerful your brain is. Like if your brain is intact, you can fight a lot.
Oh, you, yeah.
But well, even, once that's gone.
Even, so I kind of had a similar, I almost had the exact experience actually. I was going through grad school at the time. So what happened was when I found out he had cancer, I was in South Korea teaching English. And he sends me, I still have the email. He sends me like this one line email that just like, I didn't know about the school. I didn't know about all that story I told about him being sick and not feeling well. He just sends me this email that's like, hey man, just want to let you know they found a tumor in my brain and we're going to go have it checked out tomorrow again. I might have to have surgery Monday. And this is on a Friday.
Yeah, and you're halfway across the world.
And I'm in South Korea.
Yeah.
And it's my birthday weekend.
Oh.
And not that like, ooh, my birthday.
Right,
but it's just a lot.
Yeah.
And, I'm like, I get the email and immediately I'm like, what? And just get on there like, what do you mean? Like, what's going on?
Right.
What's going on? Call me. Because we talked every day when I was over there. We were super close.
Yeah.
And we had a scheduled time every day we talked. And I got that. So that was 2012. I flew back on my birthday, business class. It was like this. They knew a pilot on United, got me this business class ticket for like $400, just paid the taxes.
Oh.
Just cruised back.
Yeah.
It was great. I don't know if you've ever flown business class.
I have once. I got randomly upgraded.
You don't want to go back, do you?
No.
No.
Got like dinner and stuff.
Well, yeah, I got on there immediately and was like, I need a drink. I'm like, I've never had Crevassier. Like, give me one of those. It was horrible. I hate brandy.
Yeah.
Then I'd had a glass of wine. But so I cruised back. I landed on Sunday. He had surgery the next day. And so I decided to move in with him. I lived with him for a year. Helped him through radiation, chemo.
Yeah.
Lived with him in California when he was living with his wife and her two kids. So I helped out. But then the next year, he really wanted me to go to the U of O to get my grad degree. We had been talking about it for a while.
So you had not started grad school
yet? I hadn't started. So year one was me helping him through, and he was healthy. Like,
he was, like, functioning fine. And
yeah, and he had lost weight and actually, like, was feeling good, relatively speaking. Like, he'd recover. Like, he'd take these stints of, like, chemo for 5 days. And it would just destroy him. I mean, I don't know if you've probably seen it.
Yeah.
So you know that destroys him. But he'd bounce back pretty good, just in time to take another round of chemo. But he was doing pretty good. And usually they say, well, after a year, the tumor comes back. And it's coming up on a year. And they're like, oh, you're looking pretty good. You know, so it's like there's this little glimmer of hope. And all the meanwhile, I'm applying for grad school. And I get in. And he's all excited. And he's like, oh, yeah, you got to go. You know, you got to go. So I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, thought about it for a while. I'm like, all right. Like, this is not in the back of my head. I'm still hearing that 2-year diagnosis.
Right. And it's hard to care about stuff.
It's hard
like school.
It was so hard.
Yeah.
So I went, and then, like, immediately when I left, like, the tumor came back. And he had to come back to Oregon and live with his parents, my grandparents. And all the meanwhile, I'm trying to go to school.
Yeah.
Like, I get through that first year, and I was just, I mean, I was doing my schoolwork. I was helping, but, I mean, my group definitely helped carry me through.
Yeah.
Which I can't thank them enough for that.
But, yeah, that's huge.
But, so, yeah, when you're experiencing that, you're just like, you don't care about anything else.
Right.
Losing a parent like that. You just don't. So.
Right, and you don't care about, at least I didn't, I quit. That's, like, at the time of my life when I quit caring about, like, how I was like supposed to look and act and
Big time.
The kind of stuff that I was supposed to pretend I cared about and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Just like, nah, I'm over that. Like, that's what, I don't have enough energy left at the end of the day to care about all this other stuff.
Exactly. And that's hard to explain to people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, look at my place right here. There's like nothing in here.
Yeah.
And that's why. It's because I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't, like, I'd love to actually have some art and stuff on the walls, but maybe I'm going to move and I just, I don't know what art to buy. I don't know how to buy art, but like you look around and I'm like, I don't care.
Just go to the art store.
Yeah, just go to the art store.
Art.
I want some art to put on my
walls.
Do
you have any arts?
My place is a dungeon. But yeah, I get that. You just...
But it sucks though, like when you're in school, because it's like school, for me, I've always had a hard time like thinking school mattered.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, like just anyway.
After going through it, it's like, did that matter?
Yeah. So like that was always a struggle.
Yeah.
And then like when life is really... getting crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, I really don't care about this.
Sure.
Luckily, I had gotten through most of it. I mean, honestly, I didn't think school was very hard, but
no.
I didn't think college was very hard.
Right.
But I had gotten through like the parts that were, and it was just like coasting towards the end, which was good. Like for me, if this had happened a year earlier, like say in the middle of my junior year, I don't know if I'd have
finished. Yeah.
You know?
That's fair. Yeah.
Like I would have either quit or tried and failed, potentially.
Yeah.
You know, luckily all I had to do was pass like Urban Farm and Ultimate Frisbee.
Dude, Ultimate Frisbee.
Both of those classes were like two of my favorite classes.
Absolutely. Come on.
I learned how to garden and I learned how to play Ultimate Frisbee better. Two valuable
What
life
else do you need in life?
Those are two things that I still use
and still enjoy.
Yeah.
It's like those are things I actually enjoy doing as an adult.
Right.
I don't enjoy doing trigonometry.
No.
I can do it.
Nor do I need to.
Nor do I need to.
Yeah. But I do need to exercise and have fun doing it. So that's my Frisbee. Enjoy growing my own food.
It's an interesting point, though. Like, our education system just, like, teaching life skills and versus, like, these very specific skills that it's like, I don't know if that doesn't matter. Can we teach people to be, like, happy adults?
Right.
You know? So you got through school and you made a good point of like, it kind of just changes your outlook on everything. And you were pretty young at the time. I mean,
yeah, it's 22.
22. I mean, a 22-year-old, just trying to think back of like, we're 22-year-old men are pretty much
kids. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that kind of change your outlook on becoming a man or just how you viewed that whole thing? Because even now you're looking at your dad's relationship or your dad and you're like, oh my God, this guy's
He's just another guy.
Just another guy and he's broken. Now he needs me. And you know, how does that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, we mentioned it a minute ago. It just like burns away all of the fluff that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I care about you. Like you only have enough energy in a time like that to care about two or three things.
Yeah.
And so you pick like my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, I was like, okay, I'm going to keep her. I'm going to keep my family. And if everything else falls to the wayside, I'll be okay with that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that was kind of it, you know? And then, but then it's, I don't know. So I guess like, I mean, you ask how's that help in shaping becoming a man? I guess in the way that like, you just learn how to be honest and real because you just don't have the energy anymore to be fake.
Well,
you know?
Well, you don't really care about what society says anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't, it's like, if I want to wear sweatpants to dinner, I'm going to wear sweatpants to dinner because I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, so you're the concept of what is a man, like that mystique of a man thing, kind of like, it just doesn't matter.
Right. And just like, like, I don't care if I'm not supposed to cry.
Yeah.
I'm super sad
right now.
And I don't cry a lot.
Yeah.
I think a lot of men are like that. But in that time in my life, I did.
Oh, man.
And
I'm with you.
That was hard knowing that like, I'm not supposed to cry, you know,
because
none of my other friends cry.
Sure.
But it's also like none of my other friends have been through this.
Sure.
Yet, you know,
had a lot of,
it's like the older you are, the more okay with crying
just
and
emotion
that kind of stuff
in general
you are you know, like the more life experience you have, which is a sign that it's probably okay.
Yeah.
You know, like if older or wiser people say that it's fine.
Sure.
And younger, immature people think that it's not. Like, well, what's probably true?
Yeah, and the question is, like, did you feel better after you cried?
Kinda, or yeah. I mean,
it's just like a release. It was kind of, yeah. It's like, God, that feels like I'm still sad, but I feel a little better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. I remember, in fact, I remember the first time I cried about my dad, about that whole situation.
Yeah.
It wasn't when I heard. It wasn't even on the plane. But it's when the moment I remember it, because it was just like soul shaking. It was in the hospital. After surgery, the doctor came out and said, we got the tumor, and it's what we thought it was. And at that point, I'm like the processing in my brain was like, oh, it's what they thought it was. That means he has 2 years to live.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was my best friend, too. And I'm just like, it was just, I was gone. Yeah. I literally curled up into a little ball and was crying on my brother's wife's lap.
Yeah.
I was like just shaking.
Because until that point, you're thinking there's enough little like
there's always a little
glimmers
hope.
Of hope.
There's that little bit of hope.
Yeah, what so you're like, okay, don't freak out yet.
Yeah, it's like, because what if they get in there and it's not that?
Yeah.
What if it's something different?
Yeah.
What if it's something different? It's like, no, they got in there. It is as they
confirmed.
Thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess the point is they're like, it was okay to do that, you know?
Yeah.
It was okay to feel that emotion. It's okay to let it out. Everyone else was too. And it's like, you know, I didn't look around and care, but you did feel a little bit needed that release.
Yeah.
And now even, I don't know about for you, but I get moments where I'll still want to cry.
Yeah.
But it's a different type of thing. It's like, oh, that's a beautiful reminder that I have there.
Yeah. It's almost more like a nostalgic, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't describe it.
No.
I
yeah, I can't.
To try, but.
No,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really random. It'll just be like in the shower or something.
Yep.
It's just like, oh, you just got like sad for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But it also like kind of felt good.
Yep. I'll have I don't know if you associate music at all with your mom, but I'll have a song come on. My dad and I used to listen to music together a lot.
Yeah.
And a song will come on and I'm like, I can't listen to this song. I'm like, yeah. I'm in a car driving. It's like, I can't be crying.
Yeah. Music's crazy like that. How powerful can be.
Even like smells.
Yeah.
Like the smell of coffee and Americano, it reminds me of just hanging out in a coffee shop with my dad. It's I don't know.
Totally.
But yeah, it's definitely, it's been a trip to see how it's looking back now. It's like what that not caring has done.
Totally.
Has helped me do.
Yeah, me too.
Whether it just be going for whatever, it's like, yeah, go for it, you know, go for that job, go for that, do something crazy
or don't go for it
or who cares.
That was like, for me, because it was like, you know, I'm 3-4 months away from finishing college.
Yeah.
And when that happened, so all my peers, what are they doing at that time? They're trying to get like their jobs. They're trying to
career,
like, all networking and going to these interviews and stuff. And I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know, which helped and hurt, you know, because it's like, I really didn't try to get like a job out of college.
Do you think they noticed I guess in this case, like lack of drive to do what they were doing? Do you think they noticed or did you feel
my peers?
Yeah. Or did you feel like they noticed and even though maybe they didn't?
I don't know if I ever thought about it.
Yeah.
I feel like they didn't. I feel like everyone was just kind of concerned with themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like no one is paying attention to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But it was more just like myself. Like you have this standard for yourself, you know, like going through college, you think of yourself, at least I always did, thought of myself as like, I want to be a top tier student and not even student, but like, I want to be the kind of person that like gets a cool job out of college, you know, and like does well, you know? And then I quit. I just dropped that. I quit caring about that. Like right at the end when you're supposed to be like going and like getting your foot in the door somewhere, like at least an internship, I just didn't try.
Yeah.
So then that's a big part of why, like still today, like I am self-employed, you know, because if you don't try to get a job like the last 6 months of college or the 6 months after, but you still got to make money somehow. And like, I knew I could just like grab a random, because I knew how to do a lot of like creative arts and stuff. Yeah. So I just like pieced together work. And like, that's kind of how that started. That's and pretty, I love that now.
That's pretty, oh, I bet.
You know?
I bet.
But, like, at first, it was kind of like, it's just kind of like where I landed because
sure.
I didn't care enough. Because it's hard to get a job, you know? Like,
oh, it's, yeah, super hard.
Not that I couldn't do it. I just didn't care enough to jump through the hoops that you yeah. have to jump through.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go to the informational interviews and then write these cover letters
bullshit.
And go to all these, you know, multiple interviews. And it's just like, that just... It was just like, yeah, I probably could pull yeah. myself together and do that, but,
cool,
I, just
but I don't want
don't
to.
Care.
Yeah,
you know, and it's really hard to go through that much when you just don't
yeah.
want to.
Well, a lot of that, I mean, a lot of that too is like a lot of that networking and stuff is like people telling you what you, it's like you're trying to live up to the standard of what a business person should be, or you're trying to you got to get in there and be this business person.
Yeah,
it's like, well,
you got to pretend to be somebody else.
I don't want to pretend to be this person.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go there and do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, that's what I probably, I, they probably weren't very happy with me in the graduate program about that because I didn't want to
right.
network. I didn't care.
It's this game you have to play
yeah.
that everybody in the back of their mind kind of knows is stupid, but yeah. like, whatever, just do it. But like, when you're just that worn out.
Yeah. Do you find that now, too, you have a general resistance to play any of those types of games, just in, like in life in general?
Yeah, and I think I've always kind of had that, yeah. but I was more capable of just like shutting that part of me up
yeah.
and just going with it. But now I'm like, I can't.
Now it's getting
just like,
entrenched.
If it doesn't make sense to me, I'm not going to do it. That's kind of how I
yeah
operate.
And you feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, because it's worked.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair. I guess if there's times where it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Then
well,
maybe
there are
you don't
times.
Feel so good.
There are times it hasn't worked, like in certain situations. But like over the last 5 years of me working for myself,
yeah.
if you look at the whole arc of 5 years, like from where I started, where I'm now, like that worked. But if you just look at any isolated situation,
yeah.
it doesn't always work. Like I lose out on some, I might maybe lose out on some opportunities, or like don't mesh well with others that could have led to some opportunities. Because of my personality.
Sure.
But whatever.
Right. But I mean,
overall,
like,
it's worked out.
At the same time, you know, you're a good dude. Like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
yeah,
and
I'm
if
doing
they don't,
right. And it's like, if you don't jibe with me, then.
Exactly. I don't want to pretend to, I just know that like, there's no person that is going to fit perfectly with everybody else.
Yeah.
So it's not about fitting well. It's about just finding people that
yeah.
you already fit well with.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know,
no, it makes
it's not about
sense.
Being like, oh, I'm going to go for this gig or this client or whatever, like I gotta yeah. turn myself into somebody that they'll like.
Yeah.
I just be like, this is me. Do you get it or not?
Yeah.
If you don't, okay, that's fine. I'll
you're
find
cool
someone that does, you
yeah.
know? Because I know that there's just enough variety out in the world that like
sure.
you'll find
there will be
you'll find your little area
yeah.
where you fit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so I mean I feel the same way, but at the same time I still struggle with like feeling other. Do you know what I mean? Like I like, it's like I know I'm different.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always feel good.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like, well, I don't do what I'm not typically like a typical man, like what society says. And sometimes it's like, it doesn't create problems, but it definitely like it's different. You feel different.
Yeah.
And that can just, for me, just feel like it's just a little insecurity where it's like, it's a little uncomfortable, even though I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
You're just like aware.
I'm just aware
of your
it.
Differences, and
yeah.
it's hard to just.
Yeah, and even when people recognize it, you're like, well, it's not that you're recognizing something bad. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong.
But if you're slightly ashamed of it in the back of your mind,
yeah.
then
yeah.
if somebody points it out, even if they don't mean anything by it,
you feel other.
You might inject like your own meaning onto that.
Yeah.
Because if you already feel bad about it,
yeah.
you know.
So it's like, well, I don't care, but then I care. And then it's like, what the.
Yeah, that's just, I think that's just how it. Insecurity works.
Yeah. 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 No,
know?
Exactly.
It's like nobody actually cares.
Exactly.
But
it's,
you do. So
yeah.
if they say anything, you're assuming that they also do,
yeah.
you know?
It's getting better. But did you ever have anything like that? Or was it just like more just like, oh, don't care. I'll find it. I'll find my own groove.
Oh, no. It was a struggle.
Yeah.
It was like I said, I worked at Starbucks. Like that was not like a high school job. That was after college.
Yeah.
Because I'm like working for myself. Self-employed.
Oh, and, so you're doing both.
Yeah, because like...
Slanging coffee and...
Newsflash, if you just decide to be a freelancer from zero, you don't make enough to live on
yeah.
right away.
Yeah.
So I got this like 20-hour a week job at a Starbucks, you know?
Sure.
And like that in and of itself, I actually didn't mind. Like I try to just have like the best possible attitude about it, and like I'm just gonna do this job for a time, and I'm gonna try to be really good at it, and just try to, you know, like I try to just pretend like, what if Starbucks was like my client? What would I do? Like, I'm gonna try to make their organization better. I'm gonna try to just work hard. But then like somebody I knew from college would like come in to Starbucks and like order a drink, and I'm like,
you're like, hey,
wearing
man.
This green apron, yeah. You know, like, and they're like on their lunch break from their like.
Yeah.
Accounting firm.
Sure.
Making probably a good salary, and I'm slinging drinks for yeah. $10 an hour, you know. But that allowed me, you know, just that little bit of like predictable income allowed me to be able to like build like a freelance business and a small business to, yeah. without as much pressure,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And I think it worked. I'm really glad I did it. Yeah. And I made some good friends there too. And,
sure.
But yeah, it was, you know, still like there's this insecurity. It's just sure. like, I have a bachelor's degree and I'm working at Starbucks, you know, yeah. like that's,
I think that's probably the story of a lot of people.
It is.
Too.
And, but nobody, it's hard. But nobody's proud of that.
Nobody's proud of that. And it's hard to care that other people are doing that too. It's like, you get like selfish. You're like, yeah, but I don't know. It's
exactly.
not
it's like, well, I'm better than
that. I'm better than that. So
it doesn't matter what they're doing yeah, because yeah. I'm better.
Yeah.
I should be. You
I should
know,
be here,
CEO of something by now, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm 23.
Sure. And do you think you modeled that? Like, was your dad like? Was it like step? Like, he went to college, he got a job, or is it just job work?
Oh, my dad never went to college.
Yeah,
which is kind of awesome to me because he does very, very well and makes a lot of money.
Yeah,
as just he literally has an entry level job at Cisco, but it's commission.
Oh, Jesus.
So, like...
A lot of restaurants using Cisco.
Like, you or I could go get... business. You or I could go get the same job he has. If you wanted that job, I bet within 3 months, you could get hired.
Yeah.
It's just not hard. Not a hard job to get.
Yeah.
It's just, like, we need people on the ground.
Yeah.
Knocking on doors, you know? And they don't have... There's no risk for them because it's sure. all... It's straight commission.
Mm-hmm.
He makes $0 if he makes zero sales.
Oh.
You know?
Shit.
But that never happens. He yeah. makes a ton of sales mm. and makes a ton of money. Which is awesome to me because he just like totally went around like the system.
Yeah.
And does very well.
So
and that's awesome.
That is awesome. I mean, that's kind of brave in a way though too. I guess a lot of confidence there in that guy where you're just like, yeah, no salary. Watch this.
Well, he grew up dirt poor with all of his other six siblings. They're all dirt poor. And it's funny. All of them are kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Like they all just scrapped their, none of them went to college. They all just kind of scrapped their way into successful careers, and they're all doing pretty well.
Shit.
So
you're now, you're 22, 23-year-old Caleb. You got your green apron on, and you're steaming a Breve latte for some 47-year-old single
yeah.
cougar or whatever.
Yeah, seriously.
You know? Like, what's going through your head? Are you looking back at dad, and you're like, oh, shit. And they're like, dad was already doing it by then.
I don't know. I never really compared it because I think my dad like really wanted me to go to college,
yep.
partially because he never did. And I think he thought it would have been like easier for him if he would have gone to college, which I think partially would have been true. Like back in the 80s, if you got a degree, you kind of just
kinda
got
a job, right?
You yeah. know, like that's how it worked.
Not the case anymore.
You know, so he's thinking that like, okay. And he made a lot of money so he could help me go to college.
Sure.
So he looked at that as his role, I think. Like I didn't get this because I grew up poor, so I'm going to help my son go to college. Then he'll just get a job yeah. and life will be easy.
Yeah.
And then I think he kind of just saw that not work. And he never like looked at me for it. I think he just kind of realized like, oh, the world changed. Also, since my mom died, I talked about how I quit caring about all what things are supposed to be. He kind of did too. Yeah. So he quit caring about like what your son is supposed to do.
Sure.
You know,
just let him be.
Because he was too tired to care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so that helped.
But
no one really judged each other, and no one really ever has in my family, which is
pretty
great.
Awesome. I mean, I'm just hearing what you're describing to me. He just sounded like a pretty cool, laid back dude growing up. Is that
my dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
I'm sure he had his moments. So even
that's my dad had his moments. He definitely had his moments, and he struggled with just like being grumpy and like if you weren't like as good at something.
He thought you could. Oh, okay.
He's just like, he expected right. everybody to be like him.
Yeah.
You know? He's just
yeah.
like, he's just a super hard worker.
Yeah.
And if you weren't as hard of a worker, sure, like, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
That's kind of how he thought.
It's like, it's like that thing in, like, sports. If you played basketball at all, you might have scored, like, let's say you scored 10 points in a game. He would have been like, yeah, I would have scored 11.
Mm-hmm.
I would have scored. I would have made that one free throw you missed.
Well, he'd be more like, I scored 10 points. Why didn't all of you score 10 points? You know?
Yeah.
If you scored 9, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I scored 10. You should be able to. That's kind of more how he was.
Yeah.
You know? He's still kind of like that. And I struggle. I kind of am that way too.
Sure.
And I try to not be.
Yeah.
But in some ways it is. It can be an advantage too. Like, I just have a higher standard for people.
I'm with you.
And like a low tolerance for people that like don't carry their weight, which is kind of harsh.
Yeah. But
as like a business owner now, like finding people to help me out, like I think that's a good thing to look for. It's,
yeah,
like, do you carry your weight?
Sure.
But I try not to expect people to be the same as me. That's what
they don't have your skill set specifically.
Because they haven't had my life.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And but I just expect an honest,
sure,
effort from everyone.
Yeah. Exactly. You know? Yeah. It's funny, my dad was a teacher and I kind of gravitated towards that naturally and did some teaching, and I'm very, like, I found myself to be pretty patient with teenagers. They'd have a stupid question most of the time, but it was like, okay, well, let's sit down and work this out. Like, first of all, like, I did a little bit of tutoring as well. It's like, have you tried this math problem? Have you actually tried?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. I'm like, all right.
This is your first problem.
Go ahead. Yeah. Let's go ahead and try. And if you can't do it, come back to me.
Yeah.
And if they did try and they legit couldn't figure it out, I'd like patiently walk them through it. Adult Brad, or not like Brad who works with adults, I get a stupid question and I'm just like, Jesus. Like, I have to pause for a moment,
yeah,
because I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
And like, make sure you don't say anything.
Yeah. I'm like, hold on, because it's a stupid question. Let me think about it. And then I address the question.
Yeah.
But it's like, so with the adults, I have this higher expectation.
Right.
It's not right.
It's just like, you've made it this far.
Yeah, you've made it this far. You have this job.
You had to have known something like this.
You have the internet,
yeah,
also, that, yeah, has all the collective knowledge of human history.
Google stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm like well aware of, like, I have this, that same thing where it's like, I don't have the patience for you or,
yeah,
stupid questions.
That's a good, yeah, I'll call it a skill. You said how you like take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a skill to not reacting right away.
Except for people can physically see me reacting,
yeah,
in that way.
True.
And then they're like, oh, are you annoyed? I'm like, well, I'm not annoyed. I'm just trying not,
yeah,
to be rude.
You're right. That's not ideal either. But it's
probably, not ideal,
it's,
but it's better
than just like saying what is on your mind right away.
Let me,
you know?
Let's like, just let me take this one step right here.
That's why email is great.
Oh, email's great.
Because you can just be like, okay, this is
the exclamation point.
I'm pissed off at this person.
Yeah.
This person's an idiot. But like, I can take an hour to respond.
Yeah.
And collect my thoughts and,
yeah,
say something like more diplomatic.
And I'm finally warming up to emojis in emails.
Yeah.
Just
it
because
does soften the edges.
It just because it softens the edges, because tone is,
yeah,
you know, tone can just be lost.
Uh-huh, a little ha-ha, a winky face.
Well, ha-ha,
here and there.
I like the ha-ha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, just so you know, I'm laughing.
Yeah, I'm laughing. This, read this while,
yeah,
laughing and smiling.
Yeah.
Exclamation point.
Because otherwise it's just like really cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of statements with periods at the end.
Yeah. And then people read it with their own tone.
Uh-huh.
That's a struggle.
Yeah.
That's a struggle.
But then it's like, I don't talk that way. Like, with emojis. You know, like, I don't talk with, like, animation.
Excitement. No, me neither. That's why.
But so it's weird email. I feel like I'm being fake in email.
I know. I'm with
you.
But
it's, I think it's just a necessary, like, way. The medium of that communication medium just kind of calls for that.
Sure.
I think.
Sure. And that's one thing, like, I've been a little bit resistant to, like we were describing, but now I'm kind of coming around to it where it's like, I just need to do this. Like,
yeah,
I need to put this damn exclamation point at the end of this sentence just so people
just so they know I'm excited,
yeah,
or happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't, like you, I mean, I served tables at Applebee's for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was never a guy who was like, hey, guys, what can I get you? We've got some margaritas tonight.
Uh-huh.
Like, no, I was just like, I just come in, hey, folks, how you doing? What can I get you to drink? That was it.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm not coming in there chipper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not me.
That's how I was at Starbucks. And that's partially, we're probably similar in this way. Partially,
yeah,
that's like, that's what I want in my server.
Yeah.
I go out to
exactly
eat. Just,
it's like, dude, just,
if you just
be a human.
Simply ask me what I need,
yeah,
and get it for me in a reasonable
you're
amount
gonna
of time.
Get at least 20%.
You're getting the tip.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You literally don't have to do anything extra to get the maximum tip.
I'm
and
like,
if you do go above and beyond and make me super happy, you're still just going to get a 20%.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the max I'm even able to pay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, in fact, if you're kind of chipper and like overly excited, I might just kind of sit here and make fun of you a little bit at the table.
Or be slightly annoyed.
Yeah. Or be slightly annoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, in our interactions, I've never once been like, is Caleb unhappy? Is Caleb unhappy? Yeah. Like, I just assume like you seem to be doing okay.
Yeah.
But he's happy.
But some people, I think, do think I'm unhappy. Potentially.
Have you ever been told you have? Have you ever been told you have resting bitch face? Because I get it all.
Yeah,
the time.
Or whatever. I've heard people say have the male equivalent of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I've definitely been told that.
But I feel like it also could be used as an advantage. Like I don't get carded ever.
Yeah.
I don't get.
You have a beard.
Like if I'm somewhere, if I'm just walking in somewhere, like I don't really ever get questioned about it. Like I was able to like sneak into football games and stuff in college pretty easily. And I think partially it's because
just stoic.
I looked really confident and also kind of like I'd fight.
Yeah.
Like I'd argue.
Like you're
you.
Scrappy.
Yeah.
Are you Irish?
I am.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sorry, Irish people. I mean, I said
my dad had six siblings. The Irish Catholic.
Irish Catholic.
Yeah. I said my dad had six siblings and grew up dirt poor. Irish Catholic.
Fighting all those siblings. Fighting all of them probably.
Yeah, they're all scrappy.
It's funny you say that. So I was a teacher. I also taught English in South Korea. That's why I was there.
Right.
And I taught all middle school boys. Middle school boys all around the world. By the way, a globe. It's not flat. Just wanted to make that point.
We can talk about that.
Okay,
later.
We'll save that. I wrote that down. They were... It's a different... Middle school boys all around the world are stupid. Okay.
Fair.
They just have hormones coursing through their veins. They're little monsters. They don't know what's going on. And I understand. I've been one.
Yeah.
Same thing in South Korea.
Yeah.
They're little monsters. But their reverence for teachers is unparalleled.
Oh, interesting.
They would bow to me in the hallways, which made me super uncomfortable. They called me Teacher Brad. It's just like they had this respect thing. Yeah, like a title. Teachers are like on the same level as doctors.
Wow.
So like there was this reverence for me. So
it's so different than here.
Oh my God. Yeah. Tell me about it. So the only thing I would have to do when addressing them is give them this face, just this stern, if I was upset, and they would just all stop and look at me like, oh my God, he's pissed. So that face, that stoic right. face that got you into football games, mm-hmm. could control a classroom
exactly.
every so often.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Like all you gotta do is stop smiling. You don't have to like look mad, just look plain.
Yeah.
And it will look, they'll interpret it as you're mad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it can be helpful.
There is some use to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even at work, I've had to do it. Like one of the guys, I love the guy. I love him, but he's like a golden retriever.
I think I know.
And he was beatboxing in the kitchen one morning while I was having a meeting. Yeah. I just looked at him and I went, he just was like, oh, all right, I got it. Yeah. Go over here and beatbox. But it was just, you know, mm-hmm. so it comes in handy.
Yeah, you can just very quickly, like, communicate. Like,
yeah.
Hey, cut it out. You know?
It's a very male thing, too.
It is.
It's.
I know, it's unfortunate because, like, if a female is that way, I think society considers that, like, a negative thing.
And it does, but I was thinking about, along that same line, what you just said there, like, feminine energy versus masculine energy. I mean, I think everyone has those types of energies. Like, I definitely have a feminine.
Everybody has both.
Everyone has both.
Some
but it's like, yeah, some ratio. But it's like, it's weird that for men to have to display the feminine energy is no good, right? Seen as weak. For women to display a masculine energy, it's like, oh, she's a bitch.
Right.
Yet we both have this,
yeah.
this pull. And I was thinking about this a little bit and about the whole like Me Too movement and stuff like that. Man, when women decide that they're going to take something back, it's a powerful like energy.
Yeah.
It's kind of made me go, whoa.
Right.
You know? And I don't see them displaying this like this force as like a negative, even though some might.
Yeah.
But it's more like, oh shit, I'm going to just go ahead and shut up and listen.
Right.
It's just been
almost like they've had that like strength.
The whole time.
They just like finally, they feel like, okay,
yeah.
I'm sick of.
They put on their Mighty Morphin Power Ranger suit
yeah.
and was like,
and
okay.
like, I'm sick of suppressing this like strength.
This pain. Or, the, yeah.
This like attitude.
I have this pain and I'm sick of suppressing this strength.
Yeah.
And now you're going to see it.
Yeah.
Have you seen Black Panther?
I haven't.
Okay. Oh, no spoiler alerts, but watch it and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, people keep saying that. I could talk about Marvel
yeah.
for a while because I'm not a big Marvel fan.
Sure.
So I kind of just like quit trying to keep up with
yeah.
them.
So this one, I wouldn't say like I'm a superhero geek or anything like that.
Yeah.
This movie's different. It's just different. It's a great.
Does it have like a 40-minute battle scene at the end? Because that's my least favorite thing about it.
See, I didn't. Yes, of course it has a battle scene, but like I didn't read it as like a loud. It's not a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
It's not Transformers where yeah. it's just like, just is just loud.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I was more into the story. I was more into the message of what was happening.
Yeah.
I was paying attention to like the cultural pull that's in the movie and yeah. even with the female power that's in it. And it's just like, holy shit.
Yeah. So like superhero movie, this is going to get off topic.
We're not off. Like, we can go wherever we want to.
Just like my thoughts on like story, like are in conflict with Marvel's, I think.
Yeah.
But it's like, I always enjoy the first half of a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Because it's plot.
Sure.
And then it just like, okay, now let's have this hero
sure.
you know won't die.
Yep.
And let's have him fight this villain who had very little character development.
Yep.
Just some it's evil. It's literally dude. Designed for you to not care about them.
Yeah. Right.
And oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Let's spend a half an hour having them fight and. It's just there's no tension for me anymore, and I get bored.
The second half of the movie, you have to appease 14-year-old boys.
No, you don't.
What is if wrong. If you want to make $1 billion okay. on a movie, yeah. But I think you made a great point about what you're seeing in a lot of new really good stuff, like on Netflix and HBO and stuff,
right.
is that the quote unquote the villains almost become sympathetic characters.
Yeah.
And you almost like them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, to me, that's so fascinating as like a human where you're like, this guy's not good, but why do I like him?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the show Deadwood?
No.
Oh, you got to watch that. That's probably one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
It's about Old West, like the settling of Deadwood, South Dakota.
Okay.
Prostitution, just all that stuff. But like the what starts as seemingly this villain... The guy who operates a bar and prostitute house, who's like killing people and trying to get gold. And
yeah.
just like, he's a crook. I mean, he's a bad guy. But over the course of the first season and then the first half of the second season, you're like, I like this guy.
Yeah.
I like him. And that's I don't know why. I wonder if that's a male thing, like where I respect his drive and his passion. I wonder if women experience that character the same way.
I don't know. It's probably just good storytelling. There's
the storytelling.
I wish I could remember the quote who said this. There's like a quote I remember hearing this in college. That's like, there's nobody on earth who you couldn't empathize with if you hear their story.
That's a good point.
You know, that's probably all it is.
That's
you know?
A great quote.
They just probably showed you enough of his perspective.
And they did. So they see now that you say that they had some. He has a lot of monologues, and a lot of it's telling his backstory, and so you kind of do start to empathize with him a little bit. No, I guess not empathize because I didn't live in that time, and my mother wasn't a prostitute, and I wasn't sent to an orphanage home like this guy. But like,
right.
you know, he tells this story, and then I guess that endears him a little bit to you.
Yeah.
But otherwise, he's still running a brothel, and yeah. he's still. Mercilessly killing people.
It's like you watch Breaking Bad.
I've never seen one episode of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's a good example of this. And I'm actually yeah. watching it the first time right now.
Yeah.
We're like almost done.
Yeah.
But you know what it's about.
I do.
It's the yeah. premise is this chemistry teacher becomes a meth
yep.
dealer because he gets yep. cancer and needs money.
Yep.
But that's a good example because it's like the main character is a meth, or not a meth dealer, but he cooks meth.
Yeah.
You know? But they show his perspective and like how and why he got into that.
Yeah.
And like... You empathize with it.
Sure.
You know, but all they had to do was just, I'm sure every meth dealer or meth cooker in the world did it for a reason. And like, if you know and understand what that reason is, you might
right.
be on their side. If somebody told you that story in a good way, you know,
individually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, not corporately, but like one,
yeah,
you
yeah.
took one meth dealer's
one
story
person.
And really told
yeah.
it well.
Yeah.
You might be on their side.
Yeah. You know? That's a hard one for people to wrap their head around, yeah. But it's so true. Yeah.
Because they probably came from, they probably had some trauma at some point or had a home life that was rough or some mental illness or something. And like, if you really understand that,
sure,
then you understand the next step they took. And if you understand that, you understand the next step they took. And eventually they turned into a meth dealer.
Yeah.
But you understood it in a linear way. Anyway, Breaking Bad's a good example of what we're talking about. That pretty much anybody's story, if it's told well, can be relatable.
Trump?
I don't know his story enough, but...
Do you want to know?
No, I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one, because...
Because that one's right
in our face.
I feel
like it's not true, but I just said that anybody's story can be empathized with. Maybe in like 20 years, I'll be okay. Like,
I think
learning his story and empathizing with him, but it's like, it's right in my face.
It's right in your face right now, so it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Like,
even,
I don't want.
It's really hard to even want to.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And I'm not making this comparison because I think this is a very dangerous comparison to make. But even like, do you think you could do the same thing with like Hitler, or are there exceptions?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't tested the theory,
sure.
But I don't know anything about like Hitler's parents, and stuff. You know.
So somebody, like, I can't remember who it was, recently got into trouble because they were like, they got people clap back hard on this person on Twitter for like saying that Hitler was probably a good artist. He was a good artist. Like, his art was good.
And people got mad at him.
Well, people were pissed just because it's like...
Because you're not supposed to say anything good about Hitler.
Some of it was that, and she was just trying to, I think this person was just trying to like soften the...
Yeah.
She was trying to make a point, like what we were just making.
Yeah.
That you can have empathy for people, but it's like, maybe that one is not like the mass genocide of like, that's not probably the best.
I feel like there is kind of a line, but it is arbitrary.
Yeah.
And it's probably different person to person.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can talk principally, like what I think are just kind of like absolute.
Sure.
And then there's like my opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think theoretically it's possible for somebody to empathize with Hitler.
Sure.
Do I?
No.
Could I? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I've never tried and I don't want to try.
Sure.
You know? But like, if somebody did actually make an honest effort with an open enough mind, I think it's possible. But I think I have a pretty open mind, but maybe not even that open.
I think it's important to have an open mind to go into it, mean like, well, I'll listen.
Yeah.
And I could come out of this and say, no, not an ounce,
right.
Not an ounce of it. I'm glad he went into a bunker.
But then like, what if you did? What if you went into it with an open mind and you did like end up being like an advocate for Hitler and his ways?
I think those people exist right now. I think
that's
they marched
true. Those
with
are called Nazis.
Those are called Nazis. That's a
so
problem.
So could you empathize with those people?
No.
Like,
no.
Yeah.
I don't it's not that I just wouldn't. I just can't empathize.
I can empathize with like parts of their story, but then they you know, like all people hit. Are we running out of batteries?
Yeah.
But like, you can empathize with parts of people's story, but then it's like when they're at a crossroads and forced to make a decision, they make the wrong one too many times, you know?
Yeah, I think for me too, it's a problem if you're just like, whatever you're doing, like if your thing is to cause harm, then I'm not down for whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Would this work? I'll just cut this part out. Do I have to switch
it? I don't know if that'll power it. Yeah,
I
mean, we'll just pause. Yeah, cameras are the same way.
And we're back after a short commercial break.
Yeah, after that Squarespace ad.
After that Squarespace ad. We do not, they are not paying me for any of those yet.
Yeah, that was just, we just literally love Squarespace.
Yeah.
And
we built an entire website in that break. Because that's how easy it is. Along that same kind of lines, what we were talking about, though, is that reverence for power, that reverence for, like, a lot of those kind of evil characters are kind of powerful in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying, because you were wondering if it was
a
male thing.
Yeah, wonder if males just have more of a reverence for power. I've thought about this a little bit, like, even with Trump, where, I try not to hate anything in life in general because I think it's a waste of time and energy. I don't agree with everything he does, though.
Yeah.
And I think he's just an evil person. But I'm starting to wonder if it's like his persona that some men gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's probably a racist, and yeah, he hates women, and yeah, like blah, blah, blah. But I wonder if some of it is just he gets up there and he's just slinging shit to people, and he just doesn't care, and he's confident, and he...
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, and people that voted for him.
Yeah.
They'd say like, oh, he just tells it like it is. He's not a normal politician. Yeah.
But what is that? I mean, what does even that mean?
Yeah.
Like, do you... Right. Is just telling it like it is...
Like, okay. I personally respect somebody that just speaks their mind.
Yeah.
But if their mind is...
Full of hatred. If it's full of hatred and racism then and Diet Coke.
Like, I can separate those two things. It's like, I respect you for speaking your mind, but I don't respect you for hating women.
Sure.
But, like, so I'm not going to, like, I would weigh those two things. You know, I look at it as Trump. There are two traits about you. One of them is you speak your mind. One of them is you hate people. And I will look at both of those things, and I will weigh which one I think matters more. And I will say, you know what? I think... Speaking your mind is great, but hating people is way more bad than speaking your mind is good.
Sure.
So, sorry. Yeah. You know, but I think other people, evidently,
I mean, for me,
he got elected, so.
I mean, I'm not attracted to his, how he gets up there and tells it like it is. I understand the, like you said, I kind of have a respect for that sort of thing, but like, it doesn't attract me in any sort of way. I'm like, not, it just, I don't care.
It's like, almost like expected, like. I don't give you extra points if you're honest.
Right.
I just expect you to be honest.
Sure.
You know? Like, that's just how you don't fail. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to give you an A+ for being honest. I'm just going to not give you an F.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I just expect everyone to be honest. So I'm not going to be like, oh, this guy's honest. I like him a lot.
I like him a lot. Are you, you know? Are you fascinated with celebrity at all? Just the general, like, I don't know, if Brad Pitt walked into the room right now, would you just be like,
If Brad Pitt walked into your apartment
that's a really weird situation.
That would pique my interest, sure.
Okay, but, it's like, why is he walking into this?
If I was like...
Yeah. But if you came across him, would it just be like another dude to you, or...
It wouldn't be another dude, but I wouldn't care.
Yeah, okay, so I'm
I'd be like, oh, that's Brad Pitt, that's interesting. Yeah, he's here, but I'm not going to go talk to him or anything.
Yeah, I'm the same way, where it's like, cool.
Yeah.
Cool story,
If it was like a celebrity like that I actually liked...
Yeah.
Maybe I'd go up and be like, hey, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Good to see you. Yeah. Bye. You know, I'm like, I don't want to bug you and be annoying.
And I wonder if some of this attitude is why it's like, I don't care, Trump.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about your confidence.
Yeah.
You're still an asshole.
Yeah.
And I think that's the dangerous part of, like, I'm sure, like, Oprah seems to be a great person. She seems to be lovely. She's done a lot of good.
Right.
She's a powerful voice. She's a great speaker. I mean, I'm sure my politics probably align with a lot of what she believes. Do I want her to be president because she made a great speech at the Emmys?
Right, it's like,
Emmys?
You
I'm
gotta
like,
weigh it on more than just that.
I'm like, can I just see what her policy is on education and healthcare?
Exactly.
And
give me some meat and
yeah,
I'll judge you based on that.
And I say that about men, women.
Everyone.
Everyone.
Right.
But I think we have this tendency in this culture just to be moved by people's words and attitudes and how they project themselves.
Yeah, I think we're like you and me. And I mean, I know a lot of people like us, but I do think we're a minority.
Right.
They just think we see past fluffy.
Sure.
You know, like, oh, you gave a good speech. Great.
I mean, at least 10% of what she's doing has to be a facade. It has to be, I'm putting on my Oprah cape.
Yeah, 10% of what everybody's doing is a facade, you know? And that's fine, but like...
Some people, 90% of it is, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Like, and that, I mean, that's... I'm the same way.
Sure.
I try not to be, but everybody's the same way. And but at the same time, I'm not trying to run for president.
Fair.
You know?
Fair.
And it's... Well, there's some other quote. I feel like I keep pulling up quotes and I have no idea where they came from.
Yeah, I don't...
But there's like somebody said, anybody that's smart enough to run for... president is smart enough not to.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. Who wants that? Who wants that job?
And like, we need someone that's really smart.
Yeah.
But anyone that's really smart isn't going to do it.
You think there's But do you think there's a better way for the presidency? I know we're like just two dudes who don't know about like...
I'm sure there is a better
like
way.
Like civics class or anything like that. But like, do you think one person should be... Do you think we should... Or should be like this committee of like noble elders of men and women and scientists and
just, oh, interesting. Just, like one, not just politicians.
One asshole walking around with the ability to drop some nukes on people. Like, even just that.
I mean, it's supposed to be that way. You know, like, that's what Congress is supposed to do. But, yeah, like, the president is given some absolute power in just certain areas, and they're big areas. And that is scary.
Well, we have a... I think what we're seeing, too, is a lot of loopholes being exposed. With, like, ooh, we should probably... fix that.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't probably be
right.
All on him.
The whole dropping nukes thing, I listened to this whole, like, NPR, whatever program they were running, talked about that. And it's like, you can understand the reason for needing to make a decision like that really quickly. Basically, like, it came from back in the day when there were, I guess there still kind of are, like, threats of getting nuked.
Yeah.
And it was like, if country X launches a nuke at us,
we need
to
quit
and we need to retaliate. Yeah. Like, we don't have time to run it through Congress. You just got to do it.
Yeah.
But then, like, what if you made the wrong decision? And the whole, it basically boiled down to, the problem is we keep our nukes, like, in facilities on land.
Yeah.
And if somebody nuked us, they'd probably target our nukes. So you got to launch them before they get destroyed. Otherwise, you won't have any ability to fire back.
Yeah.
So what we should do is keep them all on submarines, constantly moving.
Sure.
And then the president wouldn't have to have
that absolute
power.
Yeah.
Like, that would solve that problem. Yeah. Huh. But anyway, that's a specific.
Yeah, it's very. I mean, yeah, but it's
thing that I talked about. But
it's still interesting. I listened to this. I don't know if you've ever heard Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast, but it's like. Nope. Each episode, it's like he writes a textbook and he reads it.
Oh.
But it's like...
Well done.
Oh, my God. It's so engaging. You just get lost in, like, this 6 to 8 hour podcast.
Oh, wow.
You just get lost. But he did one on, like, nuclear proliferation. I can't barely say that word. But it's just terrifying where it came from, how it progressed, and how it just rapidly almost got out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should give that one a listen if you ever want to just scare the living shit out of yourself. Yeah,
great.
Great.
Sounds fun.
But yeah, back to what we were saying, like, about... it's just
reverence for power.
Yeah, just reverence for power is just interesting. And I don't know if... I've never seen studies or data on if it's a... if there's differences between men and women, but...
I would hypothesize that there is, but I wonder why. Like, I wonder how much of that is just, like, innate, like... How much is a man just, like, wired? Like, and we're speaking of generalizations, which can be dangerous. So just, like, with the
we don't know what we're talking
with
about.
With the caveat that, like, everything I'm saying, I'm not trying to say is, like, absolutely true. But I guess if you could somehow quantify it statistically, maybe the majority of men maybe would have a reverence for power like that more than a woman statistically. But I wonder why. Like, how much of that is just, like, wired from just, like, DNA or being born... male, or how much of it is, like, as a male, like, your life experience is going to be different because of society. Like, you're going to be, like, so for example, I wrestled in high school.
Yeah,
like, that was my sport. Women, girls don't. I mean,
they
it's
do, but
they do, but it's very rare.
Don't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just, and men are, like, encouraged to do that kind of stuff, and women aren't, and some do it anyway, but they don't do it because society's encouraging them to.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore I spent more time in an environment that was much more like macho, powerful, you know? So like by the time I reached adulthood, like I'm used to people like Trump, kind of. I'm used to like big, loud, tough people. And women aren't so much because they were never encouraged to like
encouraged to
be exposed to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's like, I think, yeah, there is a difference between men and women. And I'm not, I wonder how much is... just natural, or how much is just us being a product of society?
Well, I think we touched on it before, and this is a kind of a good way to frame it, though, is like decoupling masculinity from just being male.
Right.
I mean, I kind of made that mistake previously. It's like I started talking about masculinity, and like even in my brain, when I was talking about it, I just assumed it was a male thing, but it's not.
Right.
Like it's inherent in everybody. Yet women aren't. It's not encouraged. It's not. It's frowned upon to like. To access your masculinity, you're a tomboy, you're something different. And I think you look at that wrestling example, it's like, well, this is the masculine thing to do. You know, you submit this other person into the mat, you know what I mean? And I think that's a healthy can be a healthy expression for men to like deal with a bit more testosterone creating a lot more aggression. Mm-hmm. We just naturally biologically have more testosterone.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good way to kind of do that. But like, if that's what society is telling you have to be masculine more so than anybody else, then maybe that's where the reverence for power is lying.
Yeah.
And like the turns into kind of a lust for power.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're right. Like there, I mean, it's just science that like men have more testosterone. Yeah. And that leads to more aggression. Yeah. And physicality. And like, even just the difference between men and women physically, like sure. The average man is bigger than the average woman. Sure. And stronger. That's just yeah. a fact, you know? But it's also like we feed those things too.
We do feed them.
You know, like.
But we feed them and we gender them.
Yeah. So it's like, I wonder if like from birth, like maybe the, like if everybody has a masculine side and a feminine side, yeah. like maybe a male has like 60% masculine sure. side and then. A woman has a 60%, but then like we throughout our life, men feed that masculine side; it grows to be like 80%,
sure.
and women
gets feed out of control.
It, you know, so then it's just like how much of that was learned,
yeah,
versus just innate. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But
it's just interesting to think about.
It's like, interesting to think about, and even if society doesn't feed it, I think if you look at some of these, obviously these monsters who are taking advantage of women, I think some of them. Have been rejected in their lives. And that's like, that's not a great thing for a man either. I mean, right. And I'm not saying.
Not trying to excuse it.
I'm not trying to excuse. I'm definitely not excusing it. And I'm not trying to say that men shouldn't. Men should be able to deal with rejection. So that's right. not what I'm saying. But like to be seen as a masculine male, as society sees you, to be rejected is. That doesn't fit that mold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. That's probably.
And so, I mean, that's where, so now you're rejected as a male and then you're like, I need this power. Like I need to take, and it's like, so it feeds that masculinity yeah. up to 80% in a different way.
The source of most male insecurity.
Yeah.
Potential. I never thought much about this, but like just thinking through it right now, like fear of rejection or coping with rejection.
Yeah.
It's like, cause men are supposed to be like, you know, according to society, you're supposed to be like the leader of business and family and everything. And yep. you have to like always be progressing, and rejection is the opposite of that. You sure. know, it's like going the wrong direction. And so that is, I think, and then you talked about like, you feel like you might have some insecurity with like feeling like an outsider.
Oh, I definitely do.
You know, yeah. and like you could maybe connect that to like fear of rejection
yeah.
in social groups or sure. whatever, you know,
I get upset when people call me a vegan.
Yeah.
You're not a vegan. Well, I'm not a vegan, but I have an irrational right. association with the vegan.
Like, you don't even care somebody chooses not to eat animal products.
I could not care less.
But there's, like, a stigma of, like, there's what type of people vegans are yeah. that you don't want to be.
Yeah.
Or you don't, like... Not even that you don't want to be, you just don't want people to think that.
Like, I'm not proud of that. I'm not yeah. proud of that insecurity, but it's there, and I react poorly sometimes. And what I also need to realize there, and I'm sure... what I'm starting to learn is like, that question, when it's asked specifically... can be because somebody's insecure about what they eat. It's got nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I don't know if I eat so healthy. It's like, well, are you a vegan? Because that's, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So a lot of questions in men, I don't know if we stop and think about this. It's like, well, a lot of things could just be from other people's insecurities.
Right. Yeah, because if you feel like you eat unhealthy, you don't want to hang out with people that eat really that are, healthy.
Yeah,
which is, make you feel bad.
Which
you
know? Is a whole weird dynamic, like with food. Food is a weird thing, but...
which is so weird. It's like so also the weird. Simplest, most like basic part of life. Like how do we figure out how to make that yeah. complicated?
I don't know.
You know, like you just know. Eat. Just eat food. Just,
what do you like
don't
to
worry
eat?
About it.
Great, eat it.
Yeah.
Like I bring the same damn salad to work every day.
Yeah.
It takes me 5 minutes to make in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Wrap it in nori paper like a sushi burrito and I eat it. I eat it like every day. Why? Because I don't have to think about making
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you like it tastes it enough. Good,
and
it
I don't,
does what it needs to do.
I really don't care.
Yeah.
But every so often, oh, you're eating that again. It's like, well,
I guess yeah, I'm why are you pointing that out?
I guess I am eating it again. I mean, it took
then
me
you like feel bad about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally relate to that.
Yeah. But I wonder like if men respond to that sort of thing a little bit differently. And again, not excusing it. But if it's like converted into like, I need to power trip now versus I'm going to go crawl into a hole and be sad. And I don't know. I'm just throwing shit out there.
Yeah, because the notion of feeling different and then having someone point it out, that's, I don't think, male or female different. That's everyone.
Yeah.
You know? So you're kind of wondering about the reaction to it, if there's like a noticeable male-female difference in reacting to those situations where like a man might fight and a woman might just like kind of go back in their shell. And
maybe.
I mean,
maybe
that also might just be like an introvert-extrovert thing.
Mm-hmm. And, good point. I'm very introverted. In a way. Like I'm not... Yeah.
You wouldn't want to fight somebody if they said, oh, you're eating the same salad again. You wouldn't be like, yeah, I'm eating the same salad.
Yeah.
Back off. Go away. You know?
No, I just want to like... at that point, I want to go away and go eat alone.
You just want them to just disappear.
Yeah, kind of. Do you... So it's kind of a... We had talked about this before, and this is a good place to explore this, but how do you... Do you get a reaction from people? So you do videography for weddings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not... Like, you're not a coal miner.
No.
You're not a steel worker.
Nope.
You know what I mean? You're not doing these... Yeah, you're not out there swinging shit or just being a man, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And videography, I mean, I guess, you know, thinking about it now, a lot of males doing it.
Oh, it's totally...
But the wedding industry in it of itself...
Exactly. I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
It's like not a... It's not a...
It's not a macho...
Stereotypically macho industry. Even the men that do it... Stereotypically, they're like creatives and they're not like tough machos.
Those types.
You know, they're like artists.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like the men that do it aren't the stereotypical societal man.
Yeah.
You know? But it is weird. There's like, I don't know why, but it does seem like very few women filmmakers.
Hmm.
And that's, I have no idea why. And I've heard hypotheses about it and stuff.
But
I don't know.
Come back to that, but in my just to kind of firm up that point, like in my current job, and I'm not, this isn't a brag or anything, but just it's part of the story that I'm trying to hire as many women to do things as I can.
Yeah.
And when I go to search for videographers,
can't find any.
It's very few,
yeah,
far between. It's just like it was strange.
Yeah,
it was strange to me.
I know. So like,
and it wasn't just like I'm not looking for a wedding thing. I'm not looking for a wedding videographer specifically. Like maybe if I did, it's just males.
Yeah, I don't know why this is the case, but it's like kind of an industry that attracts like nerds.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of gear.
Yeah,
it's way more gear than photography. And so I think for some reason, men are more like into gear.
Yeah.
I think that might be part of it.
Yeah.
Even though, like, when you forget about, like, once you get over the gear aspect and realize it's just storytelling,
it's just a creative storytelling.
I think women would be really good at it, but I think the gear doesn't interest them as much, so they don't get into it.
Yeah.
But I don't know why that's true. But like,
much easier to find a woman photographer.
Oh, yeah.
It was easy.
Right.
It was easy.
Yeah.
Less gear, I guess. Still storytelling, creative storytelling.
Yeah. But it's less gear. I think that might be why. It's like men are into. I don't know very many women that are like really into drones and like, you know, anybody nowadays in 2018 knows three or four dudes that have a drone and don't need it for work or anything. They just like it.
All of a sudden I know like five guys who fly drones. I'm just like, what the hell?
It's just like, there's something about it and I have no idea why, but I've noticed that men are attracted to drones way more than women are. And I think they're more attracted to audio gear and, all the other aspects of filmmaking.
Well, even going deeper, like it's for you, I don't know if you use like Final Cut Pro, for example.
I do.
Okay, well, there you go. Like that's a very technical program. And I'm not saying that women don't have the technical skills. They do. And they need to be encouraged to use them more. But it's another piece of gear. It's a very technical piece of gear instead of like digital photography. Maybe you're using Photoshop or whatever you're using and you can clean it up and make it look beautiful and tell your story that way. And again, I'm not saying that women aren't capable, because they are more than capable.
They are.
They're just as
I know,
capable.
And I know a handful that do really great job, as good as anyone. I just don't know why. It's just something I've noticed.
Yeah.
And I just objectively have noticed that there are way more men videographers than female. And I don't know why.
And maybe it was that encouragement thing we were talking about before, where women just haven't been encouraged to, or little girls haven't been encouraged to explore the more technical, techie stuff.
Maybe, yeah. Same with like DJs.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
yeah.
way more male DJs.
Yep, way
and
more.
And it's the same kind of thing. Like, you're setting up speakers and soundboards and all that stuff. It's I do notice a correlation between, like, the more gear there's, like, the more the higher percentage of males in the industry.
I bet you that'll change.
I'm sure it will. And it's also getting easier and you're needing less and less gear.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You can shoot, like, great films now on, like, Sony A7 or the Sony Alpha series, which are these tiny little mirrorless cameras that are, like, just so small. And I mean, you can, like, get one backpack and put, like, four cameras and all the gear you need and shoot, like, a full
I mean, even this podcast setup I have is...
Small.
It's small, but it's also, like, these are nice mics that I bought.
Yeah.
It's a nice recorder. That's it, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to build a kit.
It's pretty easy to build a really nice kit.
Like, you could teach someone how to set this up in, like, 10 minutes, probably.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
There you go. I set it up.
But that means it's easy.
That means it is easy, and we had a little hiccup even with batteries, and it's like, okay, just push stop here, and then it'll save.
And you figure it out.
Back to, yeah. So...
But anyway, I feel like that's not the question you were getting into.
Well, no, no, it is. That's all good part of it, though. Yeah. Question you're getting into is when you're in the wedding industry and you're the only male there, I mean, just what's do you feel like, whoa, I'm in a different world here? Or how is that making you feel?
I hadn't thought about it too much until recently, and I think it's because I knew I was going to do this podcast.
Yeah.
Because, and a part of it's too, like, I entered that industry so gradually that it was like I decided to start shooting videos and, like, weddings. I started doing weddings and I do just like a few a year. And then the next year I do a few more. Pretty, before you know it, like, you're doing them all the time. And then you're going to the industry events and the mixer parties and meeting with other wedding vendors and stuff. Like, I'm genuinely friends with a lot of other people in the industry. And you're right. They're all women. Like, I've got this list of, like, other wedding vendors that I'll, like, refer out, and they're all women, you know? But then if somebody wants another videographer, like, if I can't take a job and I need to refer, it's all dudes.
Yeah.
But I don't work with them, you know? Like, nobody hires two videographers.
Sure.
They hire me or another guy, but it's never both. So when I'm actually doing the work, it's, I'm surrounded by women, and it's very, the industry's very much driven by style and flower, and that means, like, flowers, and, you know, it's a women run industry.
Sure.
And I don't know, I never really thought much about it, and I never really noticed, I don't know, it's just like these are women that are also entrepreneurs, also doing a great job, also running businesses, and I just never really thought about it. I don't see that as that different. I see them as doing the same thing as me, just with a different style.
Sure.
But, like, I think most small business owners, entrepreneurs know that the style part is like 2% of what you're doing.
Sure.
You know, and then the other 98% is all the same.
Yeah.
It's all business and relationships and stuff. And,
well, like,
I don't know.
We were talking about, it's interesting that we're talking about this a little bit before when we first were talking about you coming on here, and you were just talking about that you noticed different things. Like,
yeah, that's true.
As a male,
drawn to different things or not drawn to other things that, a woman would be, like, flowers and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
or you just mentioned flowers. Yeah.
When you watch, I feel like you go look at, go Google, you know, like, wedding blog or something. There's all these big public online publications, you know, and they're featuring, like, real weddings. And go look at, like, the photo, the photo collection that they choose 50 images or something. Half of them are going to be table settings and flowers and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at one of my videos or one of the videos of other guys that I know, maybe the flowers, they might make it in for a second, maybe, you know, but it's like, I'm making something that's about people. But again, I don't know if that's like a male thing or not. That's just me. Like, I know that in 20 years, no one's going to care about flowers they had at their wedding, but they're going to care about the people that were there.
Sure.
You know, because the flowers are going to go to style.
Yeah.
And so is the dress. And so is the,
but it's just an observed difference.
Yeah. Like, I walk into a room and it's got flowers everywhere. I'm just not,
we look past them.
I don't, it's not the first thing I look at. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, flowers.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I like plants and I like life.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
life is good.
But like, even like plant, like I like a room with plants in it. Like, I think that feels good. And there's just like more green and life and it feels healthy.
Yeah.
But that's not like, that's a means to an end. Like, that's not the end, you know, like,
you're coloring the story with that, but it's not the story.
Yeah. And like, you go to my house, like, there's, I mean, I live with
who put the plants in the house.
Yeah, but there are plants, but it's like, and I like them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It feels more full of life and stuff, but that's not the reason. The reason is so that when us humans use it, it feels better. Like it serves us,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
Like we are the point.
We are the point. And yeah, that's a great, yeah. That's a great point.
The plants are a means.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're not the point. But I don't know, like, I don't want to knock florists either. Like I'm
No. I have
some friends that are florists
who
and they're
dearly
awesome.
Love.
And like florists. They're necessary. Like yeah. I'm very aware and totally on board with like all parts of the process are important. And like if you pull one out, it's like if you didn't have flowers at your wedding.
Yeah.
Well, here's would be boring. Like it would just be really stark feeling.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Like for you, you're like, you know what would make this collection of humans sharing love feel better? Just the whole shot, some flowers.
Yeah.
It would make this story about these humans feel better.
Yeah.
But it's not the flowers.
Right. Exactly. It's not the subject. It's like the setting of a story matters, but it's
so you're just maybe seeing storytelling as a little bit differently than other, that just what you've observed.
Yeah. It's more like my primary focus and my secondary focus. Yeah.
And
there
so
are two different things, but I need it all.
Yeah. And videography, I mean, especially with weddings can be a pretty intimate experience. Mm-hmm. You were telling me too. How has that changed in light of, you know, recent events with like Me Too and stuff, whether you're surrounded by women in this very intimate experience?
You talking about like when we talked the other day about
yeah.
like when they're literally getting dressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm just extra careful.
Well, it's not to say that you weren't before either.
Yeah.
It's not to say like you're okay. Dress being zipped up and you're like, man, I'm just whatever, that looks good. No, you're probably very mindful about it before. You're mm-hmm. not like, you're not a predator.
Right.
But like now, I mean, even for me, for example, like I'm very careful what I say, probably too careful. Like, oh yeah, dude, like you can say that. It's okay. You can compliment somebody. But even now I'm just like, well, I don't know if that's, is this okay?
I see what you mean. Yeah, I don't know.
Have you had to do you think about it more, I guess?
Not really.
No, that's fair.
Maybe I should, though.
I don't know.
Like,
no,
I'm thinking about it now.
Should you, though?
I don't know. I'm always...
You're doing your job.
I always look at my role, because most of the time the situation is this. I'm in the bridal suite.
Yeah.
And, like, there's the photographer with me. The photographer's a woman, 99% of the time. I kind of look at, like, the photographer's my teammate, even though we're separate companies. But, mm-hmm. like, I think the best experiences come from when we're working together. And I kind of look at, like, the photographer's role as a woman... Because I know societally it's just simpler for her to take this role is to say like, oh, you look so great.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of like, I'll say like, oh yeah, you look great. Like
great.
How you feel.
Just one word.
I
great.
Ask that. Well, yeah. I usually ask that. Like, how do you feel?
That's awesome.
You know, like, are you nervous? Are you excited? How you doing? You know,
it's a great,
instead of like, oh, I love your makeup or whatever. Cause I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and B, I just don't want to like, say something stupid because I don't know what I'm talking about. So I just kind of like, and I know the photographer's going to say all that stuff and all her bridesmaids are. I just don't feel the need to. So well, I don't, I just kind of like do my job and I'll say, you look great. How do you feel? Like that's about as deep as I'll go.
I like that though. I think that's a good tip. It's just like, well, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Oh, great. You feel good? Great.
Yeah. And this is talking about like, she just put her dress on or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's a whole, I mean, that usually, most bridal suites have like multiple rooms and I'll just be like, I'm going to step out.
Yeah.
Get your dress. Because every wedding video has the shot of like the dress being zipped up, a button or whatever. And the way that, for those who don't know, the way that happens with a male is I will just leave the room and I'll be like, who in here can I trust to like come get me before she finishes it? Like once the dress is on and literally all it is like the last 6 inches of the zipper.
Yeah.
And I'll film that. And usually it's like the photographer's assistant will come grab me and I'll just like that part I film. That part of the film is, of the actual filming is like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And I get the shot and then I'm out. But
it seems like.
So I just am very careful. Like I'm going to, and I think some brides wouldn't even care if I was in there.
Sure.
But I'm not going to.
You're not. Why?
I'm not going to ask.
Why? Yeah.
Hey, is it cool if I just stand here while you change? I'm not going to ask. That's weird. And I'm also not going to assume they are. So I'm just going to be like, I'm going to leave. Somebody come get me.
Well, I think that's where men need, in my opinion, need a little help. It's like, we shouldn't ask. Like, I'm not going to ask to do this. It's just like, just let me know because you know it needs to be done.
Yeah, exactly.
Help me in this situation because I need help. here.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that can be applied in many different ways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I really like the way that you did that. Like, how do you feel?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And even like, I get this thing where it's like, I want people to feel good about themselves no matter what, like male, female, anything. So yeah. If somebody says like, oh, I'm not as pretty as this person, my natural reaction is to like, be like, oh, sure you are.
Yeah.
I guess you are. You're just as pretty as that person. But now I'm just like, oh, should I be saying that? Like, is there a better way to, like, is this person going to like think I'm doing something that I'm right. not supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Cause I'm just trying
or
to,
or you're taking some angle.
Yeah. Like I'm not taking an angle. I just saying like to have confidence, you're beautiful the way you are. Don't be mad.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I don't know. I just think like the way people feel is better than the way they
for sure
look. Like, I don't know. I think just that's the most important thing, is feeling good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I guess that's the intention behind what it would look at, the, you know, the example I just gave, which is I just want you to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, but it's just interesting that you've definitely, would you say that you've learned you've had to learn to navigate it though over time, working in a very female dominated industry?
I guess.
Like, have you stepped in shit before? You're like, oops.
Not really.
Yeah.
Because I've always been very cautious. Sure. I've gotten more, honestly, I'd be more likely to step in shit now, probably.
Yeah.
Because I'm more confident.
More comfortable, too.
More comfortable, yeah. I think when I was first starting, and I think not even just in work and life, in general, the last 5-10 years, I'm a more confident person. Mm. And therefore, I think I talk more than I used to.
Yep.
And I used to, like, just be very cautious and very reserved and like extra careful not to do anything. And now I'm like much more talkative and like friendly and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd probably be more likely to do something now, but I don't know. I'm always just really careful whenever I think a strength I have is just like awareness.
Mm.
Like I know,
you can feel
it. At least I think I have awareness.
Uh-oh.
Which maybe means I do. Like, if I have enough awareness to know that I might not, might mean I do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what
like,
you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people think they have awareness.
Sure.
But because they don't have enough awareness to know that they don't have any awareness.
I work hard
and
to
so
be
I
aware.
Doubt the fact that I have awareness, which maybe is a good sign that I actually have it. Anyway, I'm going to end that tirade right now. But I feel like I have a pretty good sense of awareness. Like I can read kind of the room and know what people are feeling and like where I could fit. And if I feel like maybe I'm like an awkward element to this room, I'm just going to like minimize my presence.
Sure.
And be quiet and just do my job.
Yeah.
You know? But if I feel like everyone's cool with me being around, like I'll be a part of the group and talk to them.
It's a good skill.
I think I have that.
Yeah. And so along that lines, what about challenging views? Like if you're in a setting of all women and you're like, nah, I don't think you guys are right. You ladies are right. How do you, have you found any resistance there, whether from people or is it,
I don't know.
It's like you kind of hired me to do this job and this is what I, you know what I mean?
I feel like I'm not giving you very good answers, but
these are great
I don't
answers.
Know, not really. I mean,
it might not be a great question cause you might've just answered it, but
yeah,
you know, if you're in a setting, you're comfortable, maybe you're just like, well, maybe we could get this shot or, you know, because this is, you're just comfortable and you know what you're doing and you feel trusted. And
yeah. I don't know. I feel like that isn't really ever an issue, like when I'm shooting with my clients that are women. Because, I mean, you're talking about like maybe we should get this shot or whatever. I usually just make a suggestion and I'll explain my reasoning. And if they reject it, we won't do it. And that's just going to, in my opinion, hurt their film.
Sure.
But that's their choice,
but
you know.
That's true.
And it's unfortunate for me because then it's just like, obviously, I have a vested interest in getting really good work because I want to build my portfolio. But I'm feeling like I'm at the point now, though. I have enough good work that I can make a case for my value.
Sure.
I don't necessarily need another. I just need money.
Yeah.
So well, I just need jobs and I need the client to be happy. And if I can make something that also makes me happy, great. But the main goal is just make the client happy. So I'll say like, hey, I think we should maybe like think about running over here, like get a shot over here. I think that'd be really cool. Could help add this to the final film. And if they're like, oh no, I don't have time. I want to go like say hi to this person. They're about to leave. I don't have time. Okay.
Well, I think you're making a really important point, and I think you're validating the fact that you are mindful in these situations that because you don't need your ego fed.
Yeah, not anymore.
You don't know. You just don't care. It's like, oh, whatever. Like, you're paying me to do it. Like, I already have good shots. I think I know I'm good at this. But if you don't want it, you know, that's your choice. It might hurt your film. But I think that's something, like, to note. Like, you know, you don't seem to me like a egotistic guy. And it's cool when people are just like, man, I don't need to feed my ego. Eh, whatever.
Yeah, I think
it makes life a lot easier to live.
Yeah. And, like, the wedding filming industry is pretty forgiving because it's a lot easier to make a client happy than it is to make yourself happy, I think.
Sure.
Like, people are predisposed to liking their own wedding video.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's their own wedding and it's about them. They're the main characters and it's all of their, it's their style. It's all the people they love. It's their show. You know, so, like, they're going to like it because they're in it.
Sure.
You know, so, like, I go through every shoot with that in my mind, just being like, I personally am always trying to make the best film I can make, but if they don't want to, like, work with me to do that, I'll just be like, okay, never mind. Like, we'll just do what you want and you'll like it, because the number one goal is just make the client happy and get, like, a good review or something.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, if on top of that, I can make a really good film that I want to put on the homepage of my website, that's awesome.
Sure.
But I don't ever force that.
That's cool.
You know, 'cause I know it'll happen.
Yeah.
Like, every year I make 3 or 4 really good ones and 10 pretty good ones.
Yeah.
You know, and the pretty good ones, the clients love, and I'm fine with them, but they're not like my flagship product I'm going to put on my website, but I just don't need that anymore.
Sure.
And yeah, you're right. That is part of, like, I'm not trying to feed my ego.
Yeah.
Partially because I already have kind of gotten enough work to the standard that I want.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it sounds like, I'm hearing you say it too a little bit, that I've heard you say this and I experienced the same, is that we've gone through a pretty traumatic event that kind of wrangles in your ego anyways.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what I mean?
You get, like, defeated.
You get, just in the worst way, right? I mean, two young men losing their parent, one of their parents, is like, that's a beat down.
Right.
That's a beat down.
And then you rebuild yourself a little bit different.
Absolutely.
Than you were before.
Oh my God.
And you're like stronger kind of, but also more like gentle and maybe a little weaker in some ways, but you're with it.
Viewed as weaker probably.
Yeah.
But you're just like, man, I just want to love things now.
Yeah. It's like, maybe weaker is not the best word, but it's like a good kind of weakness. Like a
softer.
Yeah. Or maybe you're just aware of the weaknesses you already had.
Yeah.
Because they were so,
you're
exposed.
More accepting of them.
Yeah, like, everybody has the same weaknesses, but when something traumatic like that happens, they just get, like, ripped open and everyone can see. So you're like, well, everyone knows now that I have these weaknesses.
Yeah.
May as well just, like, make it a part of me
and
embrace it, you know?
And so this is a fascinating thing here, because I haven't run into anybody else that has experienced, I mean, your experience was different than mine, but it was almost the same.
A lot of overlap.
A lot of overlap.
Yeah.
When you emerged from being beaten down and stripped down and you kind of rebuilt yourself, did you have friendships that just either completely fell off the side or changed? Like, you were really close with some dude and you changed, your whole life focus shifted into something else. And then it's like, oh, I guess I'm not as close with that guy anymore.
Yeah. It's also hard to gauge though, because I was in college at the time.
Yeah.
And then I was done in college. And so, like,
geographically you were
gone. I feel like this is true of everybody. In college you have, like, the maximum amount of friends that you'll ever have.
Sure.
But then you learn later that they really weren't friends. They were just people that they were just convenient. So, you know, like,
friends. Sure.
You have 50 friends because why not? You have all this free time and they live near you.
Yep.
And then you all move separate directions and you only kept in touch with, like, two of them.
Yep.
Turns out maybe I actually only had two friends. So it's like that. I think that's true of everybody. So that was happening at the same time that I was dealing with the grief and stuff from my mom. So it's hard to know, like,
did you have,
'cause there are definitely friends that I've not kept in touch with from that season of my life,
yeah,
but it could have just been.
Did you have any friends that you had from, like, high school growing up that you maintained through college? And then all of a sudden after that, so, like, those longer relationships.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm really unique in that way. Most of my, like, best friends are from high school still.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Like, I got coffee with one of them yesterday.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
And And it's so that's unique though. I know that I'm like my wife lives very close to the town she went to high school in, and like hardly keeps in touch with anyone. Maybe a few people here and there, but it'd be rare.
Yeah.
So I am very aware that like having an active, regular friendship with somebody I went to high school with.
Yeah. And is rare. I guess I ask that too, is because a lot of male relationships can just be built on like, I don't want to say superficial because this is, some people connect through this way in a very powerful way, but like sports.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they just talk about sports all the time. They talk about different things. And for me, like, I was big into it and now I'm just not, I just don't care. Like I follow it. I'm an Oregon Ducks football fan, but I don't get upset at it the same way I did before. I just don't care in the same way. Like the storylines, I kind of like the storylines a little bit, but I'm just like, I don't care if they win or lose. Oregon football I do, but other just like professional sports, couldn't care less. And when that goes away,
you realize that you had relationships that were built on that.
Maybe kind of. It's just how we connected.
Yeah.
And now we don't connect in that way anymore. And it's definitely changed relationships. Like the point of this whole podcast is sitting down with a guy and connecting in a different way.
Yeah.
And talking about things we don't normally talk about.
Right. Building a connection that's less fleeting.
Yeah.
Cause like sports is a fleeting connection.
It's very
fleeting. You quit caring, if that's the crux of your relationship with somebody, like if that's the bulk of the common ground you had with someone, and that goes away, it's kind of like proximity friends too. Like if you live in the same neighborhood as somebody and you're friends with them,
if the common connecting move away, point goes away,
and that was pretty much the only reason you guys were friends, that goes away, and that's a fleeting connection.
I think.
But like if you connect with somebody on a deeper level, that's more like personality and personal and story similarities. Like that's not going to change if one of the people quits caring about sports or moves away, you know.
I'm going to butcher the hell out of this, but I think I remember reading a study where when women join team sports, they're more interested in the betterment of the team than they are like their individual performance.
Hmm.
And I wonder if that can relate to like a woman, just how they build relationships. Like maybe they don't build it through more fleeting means. I mean, I'm sure there is some of that. There's definitely proximity type of friendships.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder.
But I don't know. Because a lot of men, like, they just don't want to talk about shit. So it's like, let's just go get a beer and talk about whatever else. And that, in a way, is a form of communication, like an acknowledgement of pain. It's like, let's not talk about it. But let's
but it's not like, it's a subconscious acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Acknowledgement.
Yeah, but it's not a verbal.
You're not really building a relationship. You're like both just suppressing something next to each other.
Yeah.
It's not really a connection, you know?
Yeah. It's and like, I don't know how to, other than doing this. I mean, obviously doing this, you are comfortable somewhat, maybe. Maybe some things are uncomfortable to talk about, but I appreciate you being here doing it. But you're doing it. You're diving in.
Yeah.
But if we don't try, then I don't know. Like, I don't know how it gets better.
Yeah, I know. It's so fascinating. I didn't know that you lost your dad.
Yeah.
And like that, me losing my mom is like, I think a big part of the reason why I'm fine talking about whatever.
Sure.
Because I had to.
Sure.
And you know, to survive that season of my life, I had to learn to just be honest about the shit I was going through.
Yeah.
And what I was feeling, even though it didn't fit with like the narrative of a man in America that I was felt like I was supposed to. I had to just buck that and be honest and talk a lot.
Yeah.
And now I'm still that way.
Sure.
You know, because it's healthy.
Yeah.
I've had basically like, maybe you don't always need to eat healthy until you get sick or something. That's kind of how it felt. Like I didn't have to do these like mentally healthy habits until I got sick.
Ooh,
and
I like
then
that.
I had to learn how to take care of myself, and now I'm healthier.
Yeah,
because I just built these healthy habits.
Man, how true is that? What we're seeing with a lot of young boys doing things these days, like you haven't eaten healthy.
Yeah,
you haven't talked to anybody, and now you're just sick, and you're in pain, and you're acting out in horrible ways.
Yeah,
and that's a
it's
good
like you
analogy.
Don't need to until you need to.
Yeah, and it's too late.
Yeah. Which is what happened to me. You know, like you don't realize that like, oh, you're not like honest about your emotions and upfront until you have so many that you can't handle it anymore. And you're just like so hurt. Well, then you learn how to heal. And then now it's like, oh, I know how to just process things in a healthy way. And yeah. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'll talk about whatever.
Sure.
Because I know that it's healthy for me.
Yeah.
And I'm happier and more confident.
Well, it's interesting. Like sometimes I was saying, like, sometimes I get self-conscious about when people think something about me that is not true or whatever, or just thinks, you know, but the one thing that I don't, and I maybe it annoys people, is I talk about my dad all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. It makes me feel good.
It's what you're thinking about.
I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's interesting because I didn't know your dad passed until today.
Yeah.
But I've heard you talk about him.
Yeah.
Like, I know that you used to live with him and you've done a lot with him.
Yeah.
I feel like in the handful of times we've hung out, he's come up.
Well, he passed away in 2014. That was 4 years ago. Yeah. But I still talk about him like he's still alive.
Yeah.
Because he is to me.
Right.
In a way. Like, not in an unhealthy, delusional way.
Right. But he's an active, like, his legacy, I guess, is in you. And,
you know, one of the best compliments I've ever had is I walked into a room one time, and his best friend from high school goes, oh, man, feels like your dad walked in the room.
Yeah. And you're proud of that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I about cried.
That's cool.
I'm just like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I am with my, if anybody says, oh, like, you're like your mom in that way, or you learned that from your mom, it's like, okay, awesome.
I know that.
Like, that's what I want to be. That's what I want to be.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I think some people really resist wanting to be their parents or doing it differently. I think there is, I guess, a healthy way to do it differently than they did. But it's okay to just be like, you know, I kind of just want to strive for that. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you have a good relationship with them.
Yeah. So where is your mom in all this?
She, growing up, not around.
Okay.
No, nowhere. I mean,
were your parents,
around
were
enough.
Were your parents married at any point?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They got married. I have an older brother, same parents. He was about 3. I was about 1 when they separated.
Okay.
She was gone. She left. But she was around just enough to cause problems.
Okay.
She was an alcoholic. I don't know what else she was doing, but she would come in and out. She would come in, feel entitled to love from these children that she left.
Right.
She'd leave. She'd come back and do the same thing, usually drunk, causing problems. So I've never had a relationship with her. At this point, I don't need it. I don't want it.
Do you know her? Like, know where she is?
Yeah, she's in. Yeah, yeah.
You know how to get a hold of her if you wanted to?
If I wanted to, sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
I've just decided that. Like, it's just like, I don't need it. It's kind of like, I don't have time for it.
And then your dad remarried.
He did. That was an interesting circumstance, I guess. I know that they, being pretty honest here, I know they deeply loved each other. Deeply. Like, she was the first. So I remember we shared a lot, like, about everything. He called me. This was the year before he, so 2011, December 2011 is when I got this phone call.
The year before he was diagnosed.
Yeah. It was December. He went to a Christmas party and he calls me, and we had been talking about him trying to find a lady that just would love him as much as he loved women. Because just growing up, like, he just gave, man, what I observed was he had a few girlfriends and he just had this reverence for women that was just like, I don't know how to describe it, but he put so much into his relationships. And I have all of his journals from way back when that I've only read once and I need to read them again. But, he always talked about how he could be like a better lover, a better partner, blah, blah, blah. But what I observed is that they didn't love him back as much.
Yeah.
And so when he called in that December and was like, Brad, went to a Christmas party. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Cool, bro. And he's like, well, yeah, I met a lady there. I'm like, oh yeah? You know, kind of give him the like a father would do to a son. I'm like, oh yeah, tell me more.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, this is, he's like, this was a lot different. This is different. I'm like, what? Tell me, go on. He's like, yeah, well, we just got to chatting and it just really clicked. And he's like, well, we might have made out that night. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, and we had talked about before, like, like just the theory of like men just getting too excited when they get, when they first meet a woman, like, oh, you know, you get really excited. And he's like, well, you know, I'm not, he's like, I'm not going to get excited. I'm like, yeah, we don't get excited. And he's like, but I'm really excited. And he's like, as it kind of progressed over the next like weeks, he's like, dude, like, it's really weird for me. She really wants me around.
Aww.
And when he said that, it just broke me. I'm just like, oh man, that's so beautiful to me now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yes.
And it's sad that that's weird to him.
Yes.
But
yeah. Yes. So it's just how it is. But he found it. Like, I'm like, oh dude, you found it. And he's like, yeah, I think I found it. And this was very early on, very early on. So 6 months go by and like, he had moved in at that point. It was like being a part of her kids' life.
This is sad because I'm remembering the timeline and I know how this ends.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was June
of 2011.
December 2011 is when they met. Sorry, Kelly, if I got that wrong. But 6 months, he had been moved in by that point, and then he gets this diagnosis. And I just shattered me, man, because it was like,
it's like you just
found it, man. Yeah. You just found this thing that you've been journaling about for the last 15 years or longer.
And then you just get told,
that it's going to be over.
Yeah.
And it's what I had made this comment before I had to tell that backstory about how much they loved each other, is they ended up getting married.
Mm-hmm.
They got married. I can't remember. Not too long after his diagnosis. It was a beautiful beach wedding in like Monterey or Carmel or wherever, Carmel, I think it was. And
California.
It was, California, whatever. Beach.
It's all the same beach.
We were wearing shorts on the beach and they got married. And actually, it wasn't their ceremony. I was the only one present at their legal marriage in a courthouse.
Yeah.
But they had a cool beach party and it was just like so hard. It was just like beautiful. And it's the only time I've ever cried at a wedding.
Yeah, just because of everything it meant.
Just everything.
And the context. And
yeah. I don't really remember why I got started on that whole story, but I think it was just
well, I asked you about if your dad got remarried.
Yeah, he got remarried, but so yes.
Yeah.
They were
married for a year.
Until the end there. So.
I mean, that's like really sad and really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know,
she's at the
same time.
And we're still, she's
that, like, she knew, like, they got married after his diagnosis. Like, she knew potentially what could happen.
Yeah.
And she was okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, that's beautiful, you know?
Yeah. Like, her and I, have a very special connection because we went through some shit together.
Right.
Went through it together. So I'm so close with her.
That's cool because, like, she chose to go through that shit.
Yep.
She didn't have to.
She did.
You know, like, you're in his family. And, like, okay, you didn't have to either, but you had more of an obligation because you were in your dad's immediate family to, like, support him through that. But, like, she chose to, you know?
Yep.
And that, I mean, I'm thinking of parallels to my now wife. We were dating at the time when my mom died and we were going through all this stuff. And, like, she was there when my mom died. And like, we were both kids, you know?
Sure.
Like, we weren't engaged or anything. Like, we were thinking about it and stuff. But that's really, like, something I always look back on as, like, my whole life and my whole family was just, like, crumbling and falling apart. And she, like, stuck her hands in it, you know? Yeah. It's, like, she didn't have to. Like, it wasn't really her problem. Like, I had no choice but to, like, be a part of this, and my sister and my dad, we all, it was like happening to us. It didn't happen to my wife, but she, like, made it her problem too. Yeah. I had close friends like that too. Like, you see some people will kind of stand off to the edge and say like, oh, I'm so sorry, but some people will, like, dive in. And, like, I don't know, it's just like, I remember specifically who those people were.
Oh, you remember.
The ones that dove in the pit instead of just stood up at the top yelling platitudes down to you, you know? let me know if you need anything.
I don't want to hear your platitudes.
You know, I mean, I don't blame them.
I don't blame them. It's uncomfortable. People don't know what to say.
I didn't know what to say before.
Yeah.
You know, like, I only know what's helpful and what's not helpful because I've needed it.
Yep.
And, like, now I try to be the kind of person to, if I have a friend that's going through some deep stuff, I'm going to get my hands dirty because it's the only thing that really helps. Like, they just need people with them getting it on them, you know?
It's like, hey, man, I just really need to cry and I need you in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to be that kind of friend.
It is.
But like, I have a friend right now whose mom is struggling hard with cancer.
Yeah.
She has been for a long time and it's getting worse and worse. Like, this is the guy I met with yesterday. The guy I got a copy of yesterday. And it's like, I just feel like having that happen to me, like, I have a different perspective and I hope I'm able to be a part of the healing for him. And I want to be, and I feel like I can be, I'm better equipped to be, you know, like, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, it's not looking great right now.
Yeah.
And,
do you feel like you gravitate towards when you hear people are suffering like this, do you feel like you gravitate
kind
of like, not that we, either one of us can save this person, not, and I'm being emotionally save the person that's suffering, but like, it's like, man, I want to dive in. If you want me to dive in, I'll be there.
Yeah, I guess kind of. Yeah. Because I just like see myself.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like, oh, when I was like that, this is what I now know that I needed. Yep. I needed someone to just run in.
Sure.
Not ask even, you know, hey, I'm here if you need me. Like, no, I'm not going to ask for help. You just got to like jump in my life
and
start cleaning it up. You know? I mean, that's, you don't have to, but like, that's what was helpful.
The people that did that, those were the ones.
That
don't ask me questions.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Like when my mom died, you know, it was at my house that I grew up, my dad's house, their house, the one that I grew up in. And like, you know, we called some people, told some people what happened. There was some family there, but a lot of my family just showed up, you know, like that day.
The day that she...
Yeah. There were 40 people in my house probably within a few hours after. Like the neighbor, people just came over and like, that was so helpful.
Yeah.
I think just knowing like, okay, I'm not alone and people care.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, and then other people, and I'm not trying to blame them, but other people, you'd get a text and be like, hey, I'm so sorry. Like, let me know.
Yeah.
Can I help? Can you need anything? Do you need anything or whatever? Yeah. And you're just not in a place to even like think about like, ooh, what do I need?
I don't want to entertain your question.
Yeah. Like, let me think about what I need and get back to you and tell you what I need. You know, like, no, I'm literally trying not
to
die.
What could you possibly be given that's going to make it feel any better?
Because what people don't realize is it's not just like something hard happened to you. It's like, it's happening right now.
Yeah.
For a year after. It'd be like if somebody's drowning in the ocean, you're not going to stand on the boat and be like, hey, what do you need? You know, you throw something out, you dive in, you just, you know, you don't,
do you need a floating?
I'm here if you need me.
Are you good?
Yeah. That's more what it's like.
Yeah.
But you don't realize that unless you've been through it. You know?
But
some people I think just have a natural sensitivity towards it. And some people kind of realize that. And that's great. But I don't think I'm like that naturally. I've learned that.
Yeah, it's a learned.
So I don't blame anybody for not being that way.
Yeah, not something we want to learn.
Right.
But we do. But I think the day he passed away, like the day your mom passed away, you probably remember vividly as just this milestone event. She was maybe suffering some, so there's maybe some relief, like there maybe was for my dad. He was just at the end. He was gone.
Yeah.
The second half, the second year of his life, our relationship ended after the second surgery.
Yeah.
And so our relationship died before he did.
And why is that?
Because his personality changed. He regressed to like a child.
Oh.
So the tumor came back and they operated again. And
he just didn't handle it well.
Well, they cut on his brain.
Yeah.
So he became this different person.
It literally
made him a different person. He was like in a mommy state.
Yeah.
And that was harder than the day he died.
Oh yeah.
Cause I lost my
that was kind of to you the day he died.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I had that, there were some intense talks we had in between there, and I'll get to the other point I was going to make about the day my dad died. But, one of the hardest things I ever had, or heard him say, when before I left the U of O, I got accepted, and I started doubting whether I wanted to go. And I go, well, maybe I should just stay here another year. And I just made that comment, and he just looked at me. And he was starting to well up a little bit. I'm like, oh, shit. And he just goes, Brad, you got to let me die. Just like, I just stood there. I'm like, oh, what do you say? I'm like, oh, okay. Do I say okay here? I didn't say anything. I just cried.
Yeah.
And that was it. We were cool after that. I mean, it was just a moment of like very intense. He was just like, he loved me so much. He's like, dude, yeah, I'm going to die. So you need to move on.
Yeah.
And now that looking back, that's what he was saying. But fast forward just a couple months later to right before his second surgery, then I also had the talk with him that was, we were in the hospital in Bend, Oregon. He was in Bend at the time. And the doctor came in. They're like, they're just like, yeah, it's back. So you can either just let it run its course. You can try another surgery, but it's like,
yeah,
you know, whatever. Like, it's up to you guys. Doctor left. It was just my dad and I in the room. And he was kind of in a child. He was regressed pretty at that point even because the tumor was taken over.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, should... He just goes, well, very confused look on his face. And he's just like, well, should we end it?
Your dad said that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just a him and I. And now I'm like in this point where I'm like,
what are you supposed to say to that? Yes or no? It's, they're both the worst.
They're both the worst. And for me, I'm like, in my head, the answer was always, because I knew him as a healthy person and he was kind of a Taoist and just believed in karma and learning lessons in life. And so I knew what his answer would be healthy. His answer would be, no, you just let me burn up my karma. Let me learn the lesson that I'm here to lesson. Like, don't cut it short.
Yeah.
Don't cut my lesson short. So that was in my head. But so I knew my answer right away. But the other thing in my head was, this is not a responsibility that I want to have because I know I can persuade him either way.
Right.
And I was just like, immediately, I just, that all went through my head in like,
right. Five seconds. If you don't answer, you know you could, so you feel like you did. You know, like,
yeah,
if you have the power to stop something and you choose not to, you feel like the same as authorizing it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So I'm just like, no, we don't do that. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all I said.
Just took a stance.
Yep. He's like, oh, okay. I'm like, we're just going to go ahead and fight it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's do that. Let's fight it. I'm like, all right. But I just...
It's a good answer, though. I mean... It's just like, in this family, we fight.
It's the one I knew what he wanted when he was healthy, Tom. So I'm just like, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But circling back to the day he died, I was at the U of O. It was finals week. I remember who I was with. I remember the exact room I was in. So thank you, Shar, for being there for me. Not an easy room to probably be in with somebody when they get that phone call.
Right.
I knew the phone call. I knew what it was when it came through because I had just seen him the weekend before.
Yeah.
And when my phone popped up and said grandma, I'm just like, oh, I even looked at Shar. I know what this call is. Took it, and it was on my grandpa's birthday. And just this voice like, Brad, and I'm like,
you can tell.
I already knew. Yeah. And told me he passed away. And I'm just like, all I said was, okay, love you. I'm going to go ahead and go now. And just hung up the phone and just sat there for a minute and didn't say anything to Shar. And Shar, she just looked at me. She's like,
right. I'm in this.
Well, she's in it, but she was like as supportive as I couldn't. I'm glad she was there.
Right.
So thank you for being there. But, I mean, I was just, I didn't know what to do. I was in Eugene alone, lived alone. Family wasn't around.
Yeah.
Just like, I guess I'll just go home now.
Yeah.
And
that's what you do.
Yeah, I just went home and I just sat there. Like, But that same thing of like what we talked about before, people, what can I, calling you or texting you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Somebody had posted immediately on Facebook what happened that day.
Yeah.
Instantly. Oh, the fucking rage that built up in me.
Oh, really?
I got a hold of that person. I'm like, you take that fucking down right now and just give it one day.
Yeah. And just, why do you think that is? You just wanted it to be, you wanted to process it
yourself? I wanted to process it, and I knew, I was thinking about him much like I knew what Healthy Tom would have said about ending it early. I knew that he wouldn't want that shit on blast on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm just like, take it down. There's not any argument. Well, people might want to know. No, they can wait. That was an intense day, but it was just, you don't forget that. That's,
yeah,
that's
totally
imprinted. Even talking about that now, it just made me a little like rage.
Puts you back in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good to,
yeah,
feel it. I guess it is good to feel it and talk about it.
Yeah, you and I are a little different that way. And I think you're almost maybe more like my sister.
Yeah.
She had a hard time with all the people. Cause it was, you know, that, like I said, that day, a bunch of people showed up.
Yeah.
She had kind of a hard time with that, but like my dad and I kind of needed it.
Yeah.
So that opens up a whole other dynamic though, is like within the family, like everyone's hurt the same, but everybody needs different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how does everyone get what they need at the same time when they're different? You know, like my sister needs privacy and I need support.
Sure.
And we're in the same house
sure.
this day. How do we both get it? You know?
Yeah. And so, I guess for me in that moment too, I wanted the support. Like I had like three or four different people in mind. I know, not from three or four people, but those three or four people. I need those people.
Mm-hmm.
They just physically, geographically weren't there.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, that's well, I don't want anybody else right now.
Yeah.
But that kind of goes back, and the people that I'm talking about too are like my mom's growing up.
Yeah.
Remember the guy said that complimented me when, or he said, oh, it's like your dad walked in the room. His wife.
Yeah.
Is like that person to me, Mama D.
Yeah.
There's another person, another one of his friends. So I like
it. And especially since your mom wasn't around.
Exactly. Exactly. It kind of comes back to that I had collected these mother figures.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
But that not having the mom around is
a whole other
thing. That's a whole other episode of the podcast. But
yeah, I can't imagine. Because like all stuff, these struggles I'm talking about, like I'm so lucky that like I had two parents my whole life.
Yeah.
Or they're my mom's whole life. You know, for 22 years, I had a very stable family.
Right.
I'm aware of all of the benefits I have now because of that.
You think that's why maybe you gravitate towards that feeling of community a little bit more? Like, I need this community of people around me now?
Potentially.
Because it feels like more of a family.
Yeah, it could be. And my dad's just like that. And like I said, my dad had a huge family, Irish Catholic. Yep. It's just my whole life, like, family has meant big group of people. That's like what family has been since I was born, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know. But then it's interesting, like my sister likes that too, but like, I think in a different way, I'm not sure.
Part of it too is like, I'm just a little more introverted too.
And that's how my sister is.
Yeah.
She's much more introverted than I am.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that when I get emotional or upset or I start getting overwhelmed by a group, I'm like, I'm done.
You pull back.
I'm done. I need to get out of here. I need to escape now. Like I can do well. I go to a business party or go to whatever and I'm good. I'm having fun. And then like I hit a wall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need to leave now.
That's funny. So that's like my wife.
Yeah.
She's the exact same way.
Yeah.
Which is, it happens a lot with my family, like my big old huge Irish Catholic family. Like when all my cousins and everybody, it's 50 people, you know, and like, we'll have a good time. And then suddenly she's just kind of like, gives me a signal or just kind of like walks up to me and I can kind of just tell like, oh, she's
done.
We should wrap this up.
That's funny.
But I had to like learn to read that. Like at first it was like when we were first married or when she's first coming to family stuff, I didn't like pick up on the signals and she's not going to say like, I want to go, but she'll kind of like, her body language will change. I can kind of tell, but I used to not be able to read it. But anyway, she's like that. Where it's just like, I had fun and now I'm not.
And now I'm done.
Yeah.
And it is a line. So I feel for you. What's your wife's name?
Kelsey.
Kelsey, I feel for you here. It's like a line you cross. And I've tried to explain it to people, but they're just like, no, I don't get it. I'm like, neither do I, but it's who I am. So it's like you just hit a wall and you're done.
Yeah.
Kind of got it a little bit last night at an event where it was just like, having fun. And then it's like 8:30 and I'm like, no, I'm done with this.
Nope, not fun anymore.
Nope, not fun anymore. Nope.
Yeah, I'm not really like that, but I feel like it's happened to me like once or twice.
Yeah, so you know the feeling.
Yeah, kind of. But like, I don't really
have that problem.
Yeah.
But I also have no problem just leaving.
Ooh, see, that's...
That might be part of it. I know that as soon as I don't worry about, like,
the contra-
this is never going to end. I'm just like, I'm done, bye.
So the contradiction, and I'm full of contradictions, like I think most humans are. The contradiction I have there is I feel uncomfortable leaving.
Yeah.
And the thing is, nobody cares.
No, they don't.
Nobody cares.
Nobody noticed.
Nobody noticed. Nobody cares.
They remember you were there.
They remember. They
don't remember how you left.
So the I'm learning the trick to that is you just remember one thing from the event.
Yeah.
And so then if you just bounce out without saying goodbye, you just bring that one thing.
Was I talking to you about this with the episode of The Office?
We might have been talking about
it. And maybe Jim just gets one talking
the
point.
The one talking point. There it is. Yeah.
Stays long enough to get a talking point. And then takes off. So, so then on Monday, he can be like, oh, remember
people
when this
laugh
happened?
And you're like, okay, yeah, I
was here for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the right 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And I've always just been fine. Like, I think I've always just known that, like, because I personally, I don't care when people leave parties. So, no, I'm assuming no one cares when I leave a party.
Yeah.
Which is true. So, I'll have fun until I'm not having fun and then I leave.
And there's so many, like, getting into this and I'm starting to realize, like, part of the thing of feeling other for me, that's it. They're like, oh, that guy's leaving. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm different. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, you don't want people to notice that you're walking out.
Yeah, exactly.
By
nobody, and nobody cares.
You know, and like no one else is leaving. But
nobody cares.
They might notice, oh, Brad left.
Yeah, Brad left.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
Yeah. Is there more beer?
Yeah.
Is there more beer over there?
I think I shock my wife sometimes too, because she's probably more like that. And she'll, you know, kind of come up to me at a party or something and I can tell she wants to leave. And I'll just be like, oh, we can go. Like, I'll just be like, yeah, let's go. And she's just like, oh, wait.
Oh, really?
I didn't mean to.
Not now. Now?
I didn't mean to, like,
now?
Kill this. And then she's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's go. I don't care.
Yeah. If you're not having a good time, I'm probably not going to. I'm going to start
or it's
not
just
having
like,
a good time.
I'm having a good time, but I'll have a good time going home and watching TV with you, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, we can do that now.
Yeah. I like that.
You know?
I like, I need to get there.
Yeah.
But. Do you, the other thing I wanted to hit on, it got me thinking about community, is we had talked a little bit about this before, about going to church.
Yeah.
And kind of navigating being a man within a church, within that community. And you had kind of brought up a little bit before about how that can be a little tricky.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, now I feel like I'm primed to talk about this in a different way because we've talked about like the whole just aspect of honesty and like having gone through something difficult and it just makes you a more like honest person.
Yeah.
I'd almost say that like in like American white person church, which is what I go to.
Yeah. Everyone knows what you're talking about there.
It's exactly, I mean like in the Northwest and it's better than like, well, I don't want to say better or worse, but it's got its like north. It's probably more liberal than like a lot of churches. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a Portland. It's not unusual for like a Portland white person church. Anyway, that's the church I go to, and I like it.
We're in Portland, Oregon, for everyone.
Yes.
So that's
for those listening at home. It's for our international audience.
Quite white here.
Yeah, it's white. White people capital of USA. <basically. laughs> but anyway, the whole I think in Christian culture, you're supposed to have like the joy of the Lord all the time.
Mm.
Or at least that's like the interpretation that people have.
Like a rah-rah.
You're supposed to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're not, it's because you don't have enough faith or you don't believe the right thing or something. And I just don't buy into that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do. And it's frustrating. Basically, because like, as I talked about, like I've become a very honest person with myself. And like, if I don't fully understand something or believe in something or agree with something, I'm not going to pretend that I do.
Yeah.
You know,
you either try to learn or challenge it or.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that just
doesn't work out well.
So then you're forced to, you know, when you're in a group of people and they're all in kind of how I'm sometimes seeing them all rah, rah. Super happy. They seem way happier than me.
Sure. Seem.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Maybe they are.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then it's like, what do you do? Do you, like, challenge people and like try to do that in a respectful way?
Yeah.
Or do you just keep quiet?
Yeah.
And I end up doing that a lot. Just, I don't want to have a critical conversation. It's like, have you ever tried to have a really like just critical, like fact-based conversation with somebody that's just not a critical thinker?
Oh God.
You know,
yeah, like once, and then I realize I can't ever.
That's how.
Yeah.
It is sometimes, and that's what I worry it'll be. And I am surprised a lot. Like, you interviewed Chris.
Yep.
The other day. He's not that kind of person.
Yeah.
And he goes to the church that I go to.
Sure.
And like, he's a good, there are people like him. Yeah. And, but it's, you never know who they are until yeah. you have an honest conversation with them.
And, yeah.
And that's how you find out. And sometimes it's someone like Chris and it's a really good conversation and it's yeah. helpful. And it's, there's solidarity that somebody's like, yeah, I don't really understand that aspect either. Like yeah. the Bible seems inconsistent there. That doesn't make sense. And I don't know. And like, that's, I'm like, oh, thank you for saying that, you know, like,
yeah.
thank you for just acknowledging
yeah.
that like there are parts of it that you can't really defend
yeah.
or even just understand. And, but some people would just, oh, like if you say anything that might be contradictory toward like what they were taught or what they believe or whatever, they'll like, instead of just being like, huh, I never like thought about it that way. That's interesting. Like, let me think about it. Or even just saying like, I don't know. That's weird. You're right. They'll be like, oh, but they'll like try to defend it with all these like logical fallacies yeah. and stuff. And I just don't want to have that conversation. Yeah.
No, it's not.
So that's why I end up just keeping quiet a lot.
Mm.
Because I'm worried about just having that argument that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's like everybody that's ever,
energy.
Everybody's had like a political conversation with somebody they agree with, disagree with. I mean,
do they, does that happen?
I mean, it's the same, it feels the same, you know, it's just like, do you want to,
seems like I've seen a few of those on Facebook. Happening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's also frustrating too, because it's like, we're not like opposing each other.
Team,
you
human.
Know,
team human
there, but they're like worried. I think it does genuinely come out of a place of concern for me.
Yep.
They're like, oh, this guy, like his faith is not strong enough. I need to do my part
yep.
and help him like learn to trust every single like word
sure.
of the Bible. And I've just developed, and I think it's a lot of it. This is the last 5 years really since my mom died. My like faith isn't dependent on like every single word of the Bible and everything. It's more of like the Bible's one whole story and it should be kind of taken
yeah.
all at once. And I don't really like how every Bible study ever is just like cherry picked verses out of context
sure.
strung together to make a point.
Sure.
You know, and I don't know. I'm just, basically just like, I'm fine with the way that I've built my faith
yeah.
and like the premises that it's built on and the things that there's a few things I do believe, like I'm pretty certain of. And there's a lot that I'm like, I kind of maybe might know, but I really don't.
Sure.
You know, like, but there's, to me, there's enough substance there that I got, I'm good. I can run with it. You know, like
it's making you a better person. If you feel like it is,
yeah.
then that's positive, right?
Yeah. But then it's frustrating to be in an environment where it's kind of just like all scripture is like equal
yeah.
and just every word of the Bible is as important as another word of it. And
yeah.
it's just like, no, so much of it is just like weird history
yeah.
and stuff. And like a lot of the Bible is just to provide some context to other parts that are like the key
yeah.
story.
And like,
I just gotta understand that.
My dad always told me, it's like, well, it's just a love story. It's a story about love. Not like obviously romantic love,
right,
but
it's
about loving
God people. Loving us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My sister brought up something to me the other day that.
Because your sister's a Christian.
Yeah. Practicing. She's very involved in the church. Beautiful, in a beautiful way, like that you describe yourself as a Christian, where it's very open-minded and all that stuff. I love it. I don't practice. I don't really claim to be any one thing, even though I have a bunch of like Buddhist things sitting around here. But she said that, she goes, yeah, my church just made it possible for women to be deacons.
Good for them.
I'm just like, yes, I thought that too, but I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That wasn't possible. This is 2018. And that wasn't possible.
Yeah.
And now I'm sitting here thinking, well, okay, so that means mostly male leadership. And now you're describing this to me where it's like you got a guy in the church who's kind of like a little bit like lower key and not like, you know, not questioning, not like pushing so hard, but maybe just like
kind of
like,
wants to.
Yeah, but kind of wants to.
Yeah.
And do you think that's viewed as, how do you think that's being viewed as a male? And I'm not saying your maybe your church didn't have that gender thing, but it was, is there a gender thing that you ever felt within that world?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've gone to different churches.
Yeah.
The one that I've been going to for a while now, by far the best one I've ever gone to.
Yeah.
But I think that can be an issue
yeah.
at some of them. I don't know. It's a weird dichotomy because it's like all male. Typically, the typical church is all male pastors and all male leadership. But then like kind of a weird, but like all the volunteers are female. Like the people making the coffee and like,
oh boy,
doing the kids, you know, like watching the kids and stuff are all female.
That's probably good.
Well, yeah, that's true. You're right. That is
that
true.
Element but of like, it. But now when
it's
you're...
almost like led by men and done by women.
Oh man.
And this is not really the church I go to anymore, but like I used to go to this big,
but you've seen it happen in many,
I've gone to more like traditional and traditional. I mean like traditional American churches, more like conservative, the churches that you hear about.
Sure.
I mean, they're just like when people think of American churches, they think of places like this, and I've been to them, but yeah. And there's a lot of great things about them, but I think that's just kind of the reality of it is it's, and whether or not they even believe that like women should or shouldn't be in leadership, it's just the way it used to be. So it's still, and you see that in business too and everywhere. It's like 100 years ago,
it's just the way
it's just the way it was. Yeah. And it takes a really, really long time to like grow out of it. And so the church is no different. And so it's run by men. But then I think just another reality of it is, tends to be evangelical white Christian families tend to be pretty traditional in the sense that the man has a pretty good paying job and the wife is a stay-at-home mom. And that's kind of the typical conservative Christian. So therefore the mom has more time to like volunteer at the church.
Yeah.
So, but then it just makes this interesting culture where it's like led by men, but done by women. So like there's like music and everyone's like putting their hands up in there and singing worship and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like, nobody thinks critically about this. It's weird.
Yeah.
You know, where else?
Or if you just step back and look at it, you're just like, oh, this is... This
where else do you see that in the world? Nowhere.
I used to go to church when I was really young with my Grammy. She's like my mom at the time. Mm-hmm. And she'd take me and... But I remember distinctively one time that going, and it was a very sing-songy church. Mm-hmm. But they would have moments of like... They're doing scripture and praise and like whatever. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden her hands are in the sky and she starts speaking in tongues.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like less than 10 years old. And I'm just looking at her like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
What is this? This is weird.
Yeah.
This is weird. And like you said, like, I just didn't think about that. Where else?
I know. And I guess that argument in of itself doesn't necessarily mean it's like wrong or
anything. No, not at all.
But I just wish there was some like more effort in like explaining like, hey everyone, like we sing.
Can we acknowledge how weird this is?
Or just say like, yeah, exactly. Like it kind of acknowledge it in a way, just be like, we sing like for these reasons. Or
yeah.
Something. They just assume that like you walk in, like if we just start singing all together, that's just going to be fine. You know,
you don't get it.
That's every church does that. And
you don't get it.
Like what? Yeah. I mean, this is weird. And like, it maybe it could be, or is good, but like, it's not obvious that it, oh, no way that it is good. At least to me, and I think that's a personality thing. Like, I don't connect with God or really anything by singing. You know, I like music. I like listening to music. I have my music that I like.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
But I like it just, like, as art and just listening to and stuff, more of entertainment.
Yeah,
you know, it's entertainment is what it is.
I don't particularly like Christian, the form of music. Just
right. It's not very good.
Audibly, sonically, I don't
it's
like
just
it.
Not, most of it's not very good.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I like, but I just don't like connect with things in like a personal way, like a relationship way through music. You know, like we're not singing to each other right now. We're talking to each other. Yeah. To me, that's human interaction. Anyway, I don't want to sit here and be super critical of church and stuff, but like it is, I do feel, and I think a lot of it's because I've been through like a life-changing experience, which is funny. It's not even that uncommon to lose a parent, but it definitely feels like it is. But I mean, I know it's not. I guess it's maybe uncommon in America to have it happen when you're like in your early 20s.
Right. I mean, unless you die before your parents, literally everyone will lose their parents.
It's true. But most people in America that are not having real problems are going to be like 60 or something when it happens.
Exactly.
You know, so
that's just, I don't know. That's kind of a good way that you said, though, led by men and done by women.
Yeah. And
I mean, there's just so many things in this culture that are like that. That's mm-hmm. like, oh boy.
Yeah. And that's more of a critique on like the traditional
sure.
American church. Like the one that I'm at now is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's just more, way more chill. But they still sing and stuff. And I'm still like, I still kind of wish.
Whatever.
It's like, there's no, like the church that I want doesn't exist. Like I'm way too extreme. Like I just want it to be so pragmatic. I want, if you're going to do anything that's not obviously like utility, you need to explain why you're doing it.
Sure.
You know? That's kind of my stance, and I understand that that's just...
Isn't that called science?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Joke, but...
I think there are some things that are implied, like you don't have to explain why you're giving somebody coffee in the morning,
sure.
like which is another part of church. You know, you walk in, there's coffee. You don't have to explain, like, okay, we're giving this to you. You know, everyone knows it's morning time, everyone wants coffee, we're giving coffee. But then, like, I don't think that's the thing. Oh, and now we're going to have someone come... play guitar and sing, and you can sing along.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that I think should have some explanation. Imagine if you've never been to church before. It's the only place you've ever been where that happens.
And all of a sudden you're like, what the hell is this?
Like, you go to the bank and they give you coffee. Like, everyone's used to that.
Yeah.
You know? So you don't have, like, so there, I think there are aspects of like the way they set up church that don't need an explanation. Everybody gets it. Like, and it's just cultural. Like, our culture, there's certain things that are normal and certain things that aren't.
Yeah.
And if you're doing something that's not, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but I'm saying you shouldn't assume that everyone understands what's going on because that's just going to alienate people.
Right.
You know?
Oh my God. I just never thought about some of that.
Yeah.
You're just like,
and I go to church like every Sunday if I'm in town and just sitting there thinking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes it difficult for sure.
Sure. Well, it's a little distracting.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a struggle for me. It's a good struggle in some ways. Like I learned to just like,
it's teaching you something.
Let go of some stuff that isn't the way I would have done it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a good... It's good to just be flexible.
Yeah.
You know, like, this whole thing's not run the way I would do it, but that's okay. Yeah. Maybe. You know, I can just... Yeah. Or, I mean, I don't want to be the kind of person that will not accept something if it's not my way.
Sure.
You know? I don't want to be that.
It's a good attitude.
So, it's a good exercise in that.
Yeah.
And there are other great parts about it, like the community and the people.
Community, yeah.
You know, you have just like the support system that's unlike anything that I've ever seen in such a scale anywhere else. So
maybe, but could use some like social improvements.
Just less assumptions, I think.
Just,
you know?
Calm down. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm fine. If you want to sing and do stuff like that,
do that.
Great. Just know why you're doing it and explain it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's all I want.
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair.
Just don't assume but then there's also like some people believe that like church, Sunday morning church is for people that are already Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And some people believe that it's a way to reach out and to anyone.
Yeah.
And so it kind of depends on what you believe. If you believe it's for people that are already like Christians and already get it, then maybe you don't need to explain
as
much.
That's true.
But if it's
not very welcoming.
But if you're claiming to be like, you know, like this is a welcoming place for anyone, we like if you want people that aren't Christians to walk in off the street, then you need to make it a really approachable environment.
What's going on?
Exactly. You need to assume that there are people in the room that have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
And include them.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's a problem with churches never really like pick their lane.
Yeah.
They'll kind of be both or, you know, like they won't just admit like we're a church for people that are already Christians. Or at least our Sunday gathering is. And because outside of that, there's like small groups you meet up with and they encourage the community to live beyond Sunday. So it's not just the Sunday morning thing, but I think churches need to do a better job of just deciding what's our Sunday set up? Who's it for?
Yeah.
Is it to reach out to people that aren't already in or is it in the club or is it for people that already get it?
Yeah.
And like, I think that just is unclear.
When you demystify things like that, it's a little more inviting to come in for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can just make the decision like, oh, this either it's for me or it's not for me. And if it's not for me, you just have to point point them to somewhere that is for them, you know? Yeah. Anyway.
No.
It's just weird because I grew up this way, like going to church and stuff, and like never really thought about it until
you've become
the last like 5 years.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh man, I gotta like, I'm just always wrestling with some of that. Do I agree with this? And like, and then how much of it do I need to agree with?
Yeah.
Or how much of it is just kind of whatever weird, I can get over it?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm always the same thing. It's like, I'm just trying to make sense of everything.
Yeah.
And I need more info. Just give me more info so I can make sense. Is there a reason for this? Is there a good reason for it? Great.
Yeah.
If there is, let's go for it. But if you're just like telling me to do this thing just because, I'm like, no. I need a reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
If there's no reason, I don't want to spend energy on it.
Yes. Which kind of goes back to what we talked earlier. Like, I always wondered how important school was.
Yeah.
Because that's what school is. Oh, just learn this and
just do it.
Like math class in high school.
Yeah.
Like learn this formula and do it.
And it's like always
why?
It's like question. Why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was that kid that would ask like, how does this apply to the real world or whatever? Yeah. And the teachers would hate me.
Of course.
But I legitimately wanted to know like
how dare you?
Yeah. Like what career paths require this knowledge?
Oh my God.
I'm curious. Are they worth pursuing?
Yeah.
Because if they are, then maybe I'll take this a little seriously. But if it's just like, oh, rocket scientists only need this, I'd be like, I'm not interested in that.
I'm not going to try that.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were never clear about it, you know? So much of math in school is just so you can learn how to become a math teacher.
Right.
Like 90% of the people that major in math in college
become
teachers to teach people how to major in math. So that they can teach more people to major in math.
What a weird vicious circle of punishing kids.
Yeah. But anyway.
So.
That's just part of my personality, how it manifests in academia, how it manifests in church.
It manifests everywhere.
Yeah. And it's all comes from the same thing. As I'm like that. I just like need to really like.
I need to know.
If I'm going to really buy into something.
Yeah.
I need to really understand it well. Yeah. So then that's difficult in church because I want to be an active.
Productive.
Supporter.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am sometimes and I'm not sometimes. And it just kind of depends on where I'm at in this struggle of like trying to come to terms with a lot of stuff. Yeah.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So anyway. We're rearing up on lunchtime here.
Yeah, that's hungry. Fine with me.
But I got to go through a couple things here with you.
Okay.
We've got a little segment called What Women Wonder. And
isn't there a movie? Oh, that's called What Women Wonder.
Yeah, don't. This is my original idea.
With Mel Gibson.
Okay, Mel Gibson. That guy. That guy could. We could go on a whole podcast about guy.
Next episode.
Mel Gibson. Breaking down Mel Gibson. Breaking Mel.
That could be a whole series.
Oh my God.
called Breaking Mel.
We're gonna do that.
Can we
have license on that now?
I was gonna say is that a form of copyright?
I think so. If we just say we're gonna do it
and then put it on.
Yeah. It's out there now.
As long as it's timestamped.
Yeah. Okay.
Could at least defend it.
We're done.
Okay.
Got it. It's ours.
So Breaking Mel.
Okay.
Trademark.
Trademark. I have got some questions from our female listeners.
Are these standard questions you go through with every interview subject?
So they're this part. They're different questions for everybody.
Man.
These ones have not been asked yet. So, and this is just what women wonder, and I didn't know that women wonder if men think about these things, but it's interesting. So, first question is, what is your biggest pet peeve? Maybe even not biggest, but just like one that you're just like, oh, that one's an obvious one. Like, Jesus.
Oh, it's hard to pick one, but I know like the category would be just from general, like people having really bad like self-awareness and like having a really large impact on a room or
like
somebody
who's loud.
Somebody who just has a high impact people, I guess.
I'm with you.
People that like cause more
ruckus
impact than they, you know, like they don't carry their weight, like they like take more of people's energy than they give. So like really loud people, but like it's loud people that like people that don't ask questions. How about that? Like a conversation, like someone that you have a conversation with them and they just talk about themselves the whole time.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. Know, it's like that. They just took the conversation and just consumed it and never gave anything back to it. So I don't know. There's one. I don't know.
That's
I'm never good at like what's your biggest this, but like that's a big one.
I noticed.
And I'm sure I can think of more.
I mean, I noticed one for me the other day, and it's so stupid. And when I was even caught myself being upset over it, it's like the way that some people load the dishwasher.
That's like, more of a pet peeve.
I'm like, did you monsters just swipe these dishes in here? Yeah. It's like, organize this shit. Like, I can't, now I have to reload the whole thing. See, I'm already getting like, it's just like, ugh.
That's a better answer because that's actually more of a proper pet peeve. Like a, something that doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
Like my answer was more like, that's actually something that like kind of more deeply bothers me.
On like a deeper human
like that's
level.
Like a values based, like I disagree.
Like I really want to confront this person. Yeah.
So maybe I can think of like, I have a pet peeve of people like standing too close to me when I'm doing something and like,
yeah, that's a good one.
Like, I feel bad because I'll be, like, cooking, and, like, my dog will be standing too close to me, and I get mad at him. Yeah. And it's just like, this is a dog just being a dog, and I'm, like, expecting him to, like, have an awareness of me.
Exactly.
But, like, I like to have, like...
A little... Just
when I'm doing something only, I need... I want to feel very balanced, I think.
Yeah.
And when, like, somebody's too close to me, I feel like I'm going to have to kind of shift my weight a little weird, and now I'm feeling off balance. So that's probably my pet peeve is, like,
that's
if I'm cooking or doing something... I want like a little buffer.
That's such a great one. Humans are so weird.
Yeah, they are.
I hate it when people stare at me when I eat. Just like this,
like make like, eye contact.
Yeah, like, it's just weird. It's like, what are you doing? I'm eating.
Yeah.
Let me eat.
Yeah.
Or like I've actually had to stop some people. I'm like, can I help you?
That's funny.
It's just like, it's inconsequential, but it's like, don't.
I've never noticed if anyone looks at me while I eat.
Don't do it. Just like if we're having a conversation, like I can sit here and talk to
like
somebody, but if it's
like a normal amount of eye contact.
But if I'm like just sitting here and I'm like eating and all of a sudden I look up and you're just staring at me.
Oh, I see.
Me,
if you're not like in conversation with somebody,
it's
you
like,
just
dude,
notice.
What are you doing? Okay. What are you doing?
Next question.
Next question. Why can't men say what they mean?
What do you mean? I don't understand the question.
I don't understand
it
either.
You didn't say it well.
Why
I don't understand
can't
you?
Yeah.
Why can't men say what they mean? That's what women ask.
Well, that's an assumption, is what.
Yeah.
That
so
is.
There's women that have had experience with men not speaking their mind, and those women have this question.
Yep. I'm just reading it how it was written.
That's what that means.
And so this is part of the deal. Is like not only do we try to answer these, but we discuss
it's
the
funny,
actual
but then,
question.
But then we'll also get in trouble for mansplaining. So, what do you want us to do?
We don't
say what we mean, but we get in trouble when we do. Figure that one out.
We just say, "Hey, that's a really weird question," and I'm sorry you had that experience.
Yeah, I don't
there's
know.
Not really a way to answer it.
I just don't. I think if there was like a specific example story, I could maybe give an insight.
Yeah.
But that's just tough. I don't know, because I feel like sometimes women do that too, and I'm not sure if it's a man or woman issue. I think it's just people aren't always the best communicators in general.
Thank you for your manser.
Right. Yeah. See, did I overexplain that?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel
or did I not say what I meant?
I feel pretty good about it. All right. Three quick hitters for you. Ready? This is how we wrap it up.
Okay.
If you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
16?
Yep.
Say, calm down.
That's beautiful. Because, yes. The greatest lesson, what not to do or what to do that you've learned from your dad?
Quickly give me the greatest lesson you've learned from your dad. That's what you just asked.
Yeah.
Quickly.
A powerful lesson.
Think of your entire life experience with
that's
your dad and boil it down
to
the biggest thing you've learned quickly.
Quickly. Lightning round.
Oh, I don't know. Just work hard, I guess. That's probably the thing that has affected me the most.
Yeah.
Just watching him work hard and him telling me to work hard. And
But I think
that's how I live.
Not everyone is told that.
Yeah.
And that can
and I think
you.
Being told that's one thing, and then seeing it day to day for a long period of time with in an authority figure
that's
one thing.
That's a great answer.
Another thing. So,
finally, if you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why?
Real or fiction? Oh, fiction, man. That's like such a, that opens it up to
it does.
So much.
It does.
I don't know, like Han Solo.
Ooh, I like it. You know why I like it?
Why?
But I'm selfish because...
Is that what your answer is?
Nope, but it's Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still up
just
on
Harrison
Ford.
Ford, I guess. Yeah, Harrison Ford's characters.
Why Han? Well,
I don't know. He's like the good mix of like, he's a good guy, but like not too like
not too
squeaky
douchey.
Clean.
Yeah, he's
either.
Got a little suave.
You know, like he's got an edge. Like Luke is a little too like...
Whoa.
Like at first he's too whiny and then he's just like too... pure.
Yeah.
That it's unrelatable.
Yeah.
You know, but like Han Solo is like, he's a good dude. Like, you can trust him.
I'd hang with Han.
But like,
he's cool.
He's also down to earth and.
He's cool. We'd probably have fun at a party.
Yeah. It's like when you really need him, he's there.
Yeah.
But he's also like got his own thing going on.
I like it.
Which is the kind of person I want to be.
That's a great
idea. I got my own thing going on, but I also want to be there when I'm needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Han Solo.
I like it.
I also like Star Wars.
I'm with you there too.
They're losing me a little bit with the new ones,
oh,
but
boy.
I'm a classic Star Wars fan.
Better get you out of here on that note.
Yeah.
Caleb hates Star
That's
Wars.
Our next podcast. Caleb hates Star Wars.
Caleb hates That's Star Wars. Caleb
hating Star Wars, because I love Star Wars, but I'm like not as much for Caleb hating Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like the journey of me falling from grace in my Star Wars fandom. That's coming up next.
Oh God. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining, man.
Okay.
And there it is, episode number 3 in the books. You heard my first and hopefully only sound issue during that episode, about 50 minutes into the conversation. The pause in the middle was for a battery issue. It was bound to happen. I knew it was going to happen, but at least we actually recorded the episode, so that was a positive. But hopefully that won't happen again. I'll just continue to be diligent. But Caleb... You know, Caleb and I covered a lot in that episode. We came up with a new podcast idea, Breaking Mel, where we take a deep dive into the mind of Mel Gibson, even though we might not come back. And we also discovered that Caleb is a Star Wars hater, which is a good time to mention that Caleb can be found on Twitter and Instagram. I'll put those in the show notes for you, so you can get at him. You know, and then we also went deep at times. Speaking for myself, that. Got a little bit emotional for me at times, which I kind of enjoyed, but it did create kind of a heavy sense throughout the episode. But listening back, I continue to be surprised and grateful for what I learned from these conversations. Caleb and I talked about the shift in our focus following the death of a parent, and I think the same thing applies with any deeply life-changing experience that we go through. And while our focus may shift to love and people whom we are close with, going through these experiences also complicates our search for understanding who we are. That's speaking for myself, at least. You know, for me, I lost the person I was using as a guide for growing as a man, that kind of that steady hand that I could grab every so often, and, you know, he could reel me in or slap me around or whatever I needed. And understanding that these experiences can complicate growth that is important, because it just reminds me that I should be a little more gentle to and a little more forgiving of myself. Right or wrong, part of what makes me feel strong is my ability to endure difficult experiences, and it's probably a learned habit that I need to shake, but and I'm sure this is something that other men can identify with. You know, life is going to continue to happen you know, it's not going to be easy, and we don't, you know, I haven't learned from the easiest parts of my life. So whether I have it figured out or not, I might as well slow down, just, you know, take a breath every so often, give myself a hug, and just take it easy a little bit more. So I had mentioned that email that my dad wrote me. So I did want to read that to y'all. A little more context before I read it. There was no communication before this about him being sick. I had no clue that he wasn't feeling well. I didn't know any of that. So this email was just sent to me without any kind of warning or prep or anything like that. And here's what it says. This was written to me on June 8th, 2012 at 12:04 p.m. Must have been my time. I can't remember. It says, "Hey Brad, MRI found a tumor. On my way to ER to meet with neurologists. We'll know more after consult. We'll try to call around 3, but not sure of anything right now. Couldn't get the box in the mail. Later, dude. Love you." Sent from Tom's iPhone. My response, June 8th, 2012 at 12:10 p.m. "Fuck the box. Please do your best to call me for at least 30 seconds to give me an update. Sending positive energy your way. Love you, man. Brad." And just reading that back, you know, he wrote like 3 sentences or whatever. And one of the sentences was, "Couldn't get your box in the mail." And it's just funny. Like, hey, dude, they found an MRI, on the MRI, they found a tumor in my brain. Yeah, but I'm still worried about you and your box. And that's just the kind of dude he was. But this email is just, it's just given the context of there being nothing before that, it was just like, what the hell? And 2 days later, as I mentioned, I was on an airplane, and so is history. So just thought it was, I just wanted to share that. So, yeah. Ladies, please send me your questions for What Women Wonder. You can email those to the show, mmprojectpod@gmail.com. You can also get at me on the twitter.com at mmprojectpod is the handle. I can also be found on the other social medias out there. And lastly, just please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That's the best way to help out the show, to help me know how I'm doing. And, you know, 5 stars in the comments, always nice. And we can help get these conversations out to the world. All right, y'all. All right, until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough.
Grab a hold, take my hand and follow me. Where we're going, there are things for the eye to see. When we're over there, you'll feel it all around. Oh, say goodbye.